Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Trip Flip every Sunday nights on Travel Channel at 8 o'clock, 7 Central. I'm on tour. Baltimore this week. Austin, May 23rd through 25th. Then Des Moines in June. This week's guest, Jeff Tape. Go to birdbirdbird.com.
Is the Birdcast.
90% of the clubs I work.
Yeah, you know what's so funny is sometimes I take these mics and I use them on stage.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, your fucking mic sucks, but then you can't piss on it like you would a normal mic and just fucking drop it. You know?
Like you can when it's someone else's
when
mic.
When someone else's mic, you can just fucking...
Well, now you know why the man... You can see the manager cringe whenever you drop it.
Yeah. I'm going to turn off Chael Sonnen.
Or whatever. Right. Whenever there's a... Whenever they're like, sorry, we had insert some black guy's name last week.
Yeah. Sorry, the mics are all fucked up. The club here, I'm going to close this curtain too. You like how I didn't prepare at all?
Start the podcast. Is this the podcast?
Yeah, this is the podcast. This is how it goes. This is as good as it gets. I'll turn a light on. I'm in a hotel. We're in a hotel in
Cincinnati. Ohio.
And with me is the lead singer of...
Queensryche,
Jeff Tate.
Good morning. You're wearing a Tampa Bay Rays hat, a throwback Tampa Bay hat.
Isn't it badass?
That never existed. What is that, like an old Negro Leagues hat or something?
I think that's racist.
No, it's not. It's
so funny because that's what it was called, but now it's like you can't even use that phrase. But yes, yeah. No, it's not. This is
there was some, I think the Astros, they had a throwback hat for a while that was the Negro Leagues team or something?
Seriously?
Yeah, and I think the Royals did too.
No, it's they created this hat. I've taken so many fucking pictures online with this hat that everyone knows exactly what hat you're talking about, oddly enough.
Yeah.
I've been wearing it so much because I fucking love it.
It's pretty cool. It's better than any...
It's better than the current Devil Rays
hat. I can't believe the Tampa Bay Rays didn't see that hat and were like, oh, let's just use that one.
Yeah. They did it for, I guess, a throwback, like a... 10 seasons anniversary, some, I don't know.
Yeah, they've existed for 10 years. They've been to the World Series. I've been a Cubs fan since I was 5, and they've never been to the World Series.
I love that you're really a baseball fan.
The four teams that didn't exist when I started watching baseball have all been to the World Series, and two of them have won.
There are probably as many baseball fans as fans that love watching people make souffles on television.
I don't think that's true because there's only one network dedicated to baseball.
There's two. Oh, there's one and there's two for food.
Yeah.
No, it's comedian Jeff Tate.
SportsCenter will talk about football more than baseball during baseball season.
Yeah, you know what's so funny is I haven't heard anything about the baseball season right now. All they're talking about is the draft.
Yeah, the draft.
Yeah.
Come see, 15 of those guys are going to work out.
Yeah,
out of 300,
it's insane when they do the numbers. You know what's really sad is when they do when they revisit Brett Favre was taken in the 37th as a 37th pick. Look at the losers before him. Like we've never heard of these. Like they really just shit on these men. And you know these men are still into football. They're watching and they're like, really? What did I do to anybody?
All I did was.
Try my hardest and blew out my knee.
I went to a better school. I had a better college career.
Yeah.
And they picked me. Like Ryan Leaf is in jail right now.
Poor Russ.
Gets an hour a day and it's probably on SportsCenter and it's just a constant. So anytime a draft pick doesn't work out, they compare him to Ryan Leaf.
Oh, it's got to suck to be in prison. TV's on. You get your fucking 15 minutes to watch TV and they're like, Ryan Leaf, the biggest loser ever. And Ryan Leaf's like, whoa, guys, I'm trying to pay my debt back to society. His chick was hot as fuck.
Yeah.
She was a playmate, I want to say. And I was flying back. Georgia had just been born and me and Louis C.K. were flying back from West Palm to L.A. And I sat next to her and Yeah, and I remember Louis came up like three times to check on us. I don't think I really spoke to him the entire weekend. Three times on the flight. So how you guys, how you kids doing, huh? You having a good time? Watch out for this one. He's a wild one. I turned off Louis like every time I talked to Louis, I said something that offended him more and more and more. It was one of those ones where I could not say the right thing.
Really? He would get offended?
What do you think about Woody Allen movies? I don't like it. And he's like, what? I was like, yeah, I'm not a fan.
Let's talk about it.
I'm not a fan of the Woody Allen movies.
Me either.
I've never been a fan. And you know, it's because I said to him, I go, it's generational, man. Like, you're from the generation that loved his movies. I'm from the generation that knew that he fucked his daughter. So like, I was tapped out the second.
Well, let's also not forget that Woody Allen makes films, and yeah. I'm a movie fan.
Right.
I don't like fucking movies. I don't like films.
I'm a mouth breather. I got the intelligence. I got the perfect Hollywood intelligence. Like Louis C.K. is too smart for that. Like he probably gets bored during the Sixth Sense. I'm in that sweet spot that when they reveal that he's a ghost, I'm still figuring it out, and I figure it out with the movie the way it should be done. And I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I saw the Sixth Sense on acid.
Oh,
and
my God.
It never knew. Like when the movie was over, I was like, "Oh, that was okay." And my friend was like, "Can you believe the big reveal or whatever at the end?" And I was like, "What are you talking about? I didn't know you weren't supposed to know he was a ghost." I watched the entire movie like, "Oh, he dies at the beginning. He's a ghost the whole time, and then this idiot just figures it out at the end."
The insight acid gives you.
I had no idea. I was like, "Eh, it's okay. I mean, it's about a kid hanging out with a ghost, right?"
Yeah.
You're like, but you're not. You didn't know it was a ghost. I'm like, "Oh no, you didn't know it was a ghost. I knew it was a ghost the whole time, and it's just okay. It's just like an alright movie. This kid and a ghost."
What was the fucking Kaiser Soze? Holy shit!
Oh yeah, that's still like, blows
it's amazing
my mind.
That my intelligence is that exact fucking sweet spot of 10 degrees. I'm sure it's like probably 10 IQ points. Like within that 10 IQ point that they write it for, and they're like, and you know, some people read it and they're like, in the development office, and they're like, I think you're tipping the hat a little too much. I mean, I think I know East Kaiser Soze when I'm saying, where is everybody? They're all dead. And they're like, yeah. No, trust me. There's morons out there that are going to be like, why is the crippled walking? Why is the crippled walking? And then my buddy Hutch is on the other end of that pool where he, at the end, he's like, I don't get it. Who's Kaiser Soze?
He's on the far end of the 10 degrees.
Three times. He watched it three times. This is when you could steal cable in college, and I left to go to class. I had two classes, and they were watching the end, and I was like, fuck, I want to see Hutch when he realizes it. But I left, and Blair and Hutch were watching it, and I went to class, two classes, came back, and I come back, and it's the end where the beginning, and Hutch is sitting in the same spot on the couch. He goes, I don't get it. Who the fuck is Kaiser Soze? And Blair is like, it's the fucking crippled, Hutch. It's the fucking crippled. Oh. Yeah, Hutch is the same guy that got a stick caught down his throat when he was a kid throwing a stick at a Frisbee.
Yeah.
The stick missed. I used to tell this in the Disneyland on Acid story. And he goes, yeah, you know, a stick, when you look up, your mouth automatically opens. Stick's liable to go right down your throat. Happened to me twice. I'm like, what the fuck? I swear to God on my children right now. I told that as a joke on stage and hung out with a bunch of comics who met Hutch because Hutch was up in New York. And I go, tell him that's true, Hutch. And he goes, oh, yeah. It used to happen with those bike flags, too. The fucking 6-foot bike flags. He's like, remember when you just throw them in the air and watch them stick in the ground? I'm like, no, I don't think anyone fucking did that but you. But yeah, he was Hutch's.
What kind of person who has to open his mouth to look in the air?
Everyone does, he says. Everyone
likes,
does.
Likes to, and he also still just loves throwing things in the air to watch him hit the ground. Yeah. Even though he's the only person who that could kill.
Oh, he was, yeah. He, the only one in danger in that whole thing is him. Hutch is one of the most interesting people. His parenting, like now that like he's got a ton of kids, and we went to go eat one day at a bar, like just at a straight up bar, we bring our kids.
Yeah.
And he's got his youngest is like maybe like 4 months old, and he's got him in that carrying thing, and we all sit down, and he throws the youngest under the table, like under the center of the table.
I go, really?
What the fuck are you doing, man? I go, it's a human being. You gotta let him sit with us. He goes, nah, he's safe down there. I go, yeah, but he's with our feet. And he goes, yeah, but if anyone drops anything, no one's gonna, he's covered. He's covered. I go, yeah, but he's your child, and he's under the fucking table not hanging out with any of us. I go, that's like fucking old school Russian shit. And he goes, you'll be fine. They fucking dropped a platter on like all our kids except for the fucking 2-month-old.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was like, Jesus Christ, you're a fucking genius, Hutch. He's like, looked at me and goes, told you so.
Now, Now you make your daughter sit under the table.
Look, guys, everyone under the table.
All four of you.
Man, if I had a nickel for every time after that someone spilt something on Georgia, all the fuck Diet Cokes, all the time. I'm like, Jesus Christ. It's Hutch's book of parenting.
That's...
So wait, before we get too far into the podcast, because people will probably tap out halfway through.
Yeah.
Your album came out.
Yeah, my album came out on Tuesday.
Your album, comedy album.
Comedy album.
Called Tate?
It's called Jeff Tate. Well, that's my name. It's called I Got Potential.
Oh, okay. I love the fucking cover.
It's a great
fucking
picture.
Great cover. I swear to God. I'm going to show you this. I took a fucking picture identical to that.
Yeah.
And I fucking loved it. And I was like, I wanted to, I wonder where the fuck it is now. Probably in my photos. I wanted to do artwork around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that picture though. I'm never going to find it.
Wow. You have a lot of pictures.
Yeah. I'm never going to find it. I'm never going to fucking find it in here. You'll find a picture of my dick before you find that.
You will. I'm not even looking.
I'll show it to you. I'm never going to find it. But yeah, I swear to God, I love that picture. As soon as I saw it, I was like, fuck, that's a great picture.
I got lucky. It was just my friend just took it in a Target. I don't even own that hat. I was just like, look at this dumb hat. And she took the picture. And I was like, this is a great picture.
Oh, that's great. Are you dating anyone?
No.
Okay, so I'm never good at interviewing people. What I just do is tell stories about me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to genuinely interview you as if I don't know you so that the people listening can then know who you are.
Yeah.
As opposed to going, well, that guy sounded fun to listen to him listen to Bert. that's every fucking interview I do. So, Jeff Tate started stand-up comedy.
Yes.
When?
2003, early 2003. Like, I just cleared 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm at 15. I'm coming up on 15.
Wow.
When I'm 41, I'll hit 15. I'm at 14, and I'm fucking in a stride right now.
Yeah.
I was saying to someone, I'd always thought I found my voice very young. I thought I was, like, so... I've always been very comfortable on stage, but I don't think I was ever writing from my voice until really, like, recently.
Yeah.
Ever since that machine story forced me to write from my voice. It forced me to learn how to write a story and tell a story and punch it up and get it better and be comfortable with the silence and be comfortable with telling bad stories until they get good.
Right, right, right. There's always because you always told stories.
I always told stories.
You were just always good enough at it. Like I'm not even gonna put it on you. I was good enough at telling stories that I never had to get good at telling stories. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm getting to the point now where it's like I realize I can do better with this. Like, it always did well enough that I was like, this is good. I'm doing good. But then I realized, like, oh, no, I should – first of all, I should try to tell them every show.
Storytelling is a really hard art form. I watched Birbiglia when he was changing stride, I guess, and he was becoming more of a storyteller.
Yeah.
But his was
– I remember that very well.
Really?
That was when I was on tour with him.
Yeah, he's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
But I saw the like break where he was trying to fucking do straight stories. And I was like, God damn it. There's a lot of silence in this.
Well, mine came from necessity. I could never remember a set list.
Oh yeah. I can't remember a set list either.
So I remember when I was hosting, it would be harder for me to do 10 minutes than it is for me to do an hour now, because I would have to remember 30 jokes or whatever, 20 jokes. And then try to like look at the set list and remember the set list and figure out what order they go in and all of that. Now I just have to – I tell stories. I just have to tell – I have to remember five things.
Yeah.
And it fills an hour.
I remember watching Birbiglia that night and going, I can't believe he's that comfortable with the silence. But now I look back and I go, holy shit, what a fucking gangster move to be able to force yourself into a new – something new and allow yourself to fuck the process of getting to the next level. Now I'm like – I have like a couple stories where I'm like – right, I'm still a fucking hack in the sense that I want them to laugh a lot. So I'll tell joke, story, joke, story, and then end on like a joke. Usually, I can't end on stories. I have a hard time.
I like the silence. I knew that was going to be an issue, and so a few years ago, I did open mics where I would let everything die. Like, I would tell a joke and then let everything die.
Yeah.
And then hold it there for a little bit. And it was wildly uncomfortable for the first, you know, 4 or 5 months I did this. But then I started to get more comfortable with nothing happening up there.
Yeah.
And now I can do – now, this sounds bad. Like, Like,
now I can do 45 minutes of silence.
Yeah, yeah. Doesn't matter to me. But it does make it easier to bomb, like, if you're in a bad situation or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's a panic that happens on the average person's bomb. There's a panic that happens on a bad comics bomb where they start going for other people's material.
Yeah, that happens.
They start going like, I need to get out of this. This is bad. And they fucking, sorry.
Where they undercut themselves. Like, the thing that always bugs me is when somebody goes, well, I guess you didn't like that one. That, the moment you say that, the moment you let them know that you told a joke that they didn't laugh at is the moment they realize you told a joke they didn't laugh at.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just talking. If nobody laughs, they don't assume that was a joke. They assume that wasn't a joke because nobody laughed.
Yeah.
And the minute you point it out is the minute they go, well, I guess this guy's not that good.
Yeah.
They have no idea. The audience has no idea what you think are jokes or not. They just laugh when they're laughing and don't when they don't. So when you tell them that you expected a laugh at some point, that's when you just sold yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah. There was an art. I always say this. When I moved to New York, bombing was an art form. I mean, like bombing. Not bombing, but not murdering was the norm. People were always trying new shit. And then I moved to L.A. and everyone fucking killed. And I was like, Jesus Christ, how does I'd watch Attell work and he would always try new shit. And if it didn't work, he'd just go, all right, next one, and fucking barrel through. And he was always writing. And then I moved to L.A. and no, it didn't seem like anyone was writing. It seemed like everyone was just murdering. And I was like, fuck. And then
– when did you move to L.A.?
What, see how this works? Now I turn the interview about me.
No, I'm curious. I'm going to turn this – I'm going to let you answer, and then I'm going to start
90,
talking again.
90 – I think 99 was the first time I moved out, and I stayed in the Sheraton – Universal Sheraton for 7 months.
Wow.
And then I came back, and I went straight from there to I was like probably 27. I went straight from there to Scotland for a month with Patrice and Voss and a guy named Ben Bailey. And from Cash Cab.
Guy named Ben Bailey.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Yeah, he's probably more famous than both of them. He's the most famous out of all three. Yeah. I just assume because, you know, it's like, Patrice died. Everyone knows Voss because he's Last Comic Standing. Ben's the most famous of the most, I guess. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Everybody knows Voss from Last Comic Standing? That was 10 years ago.
Voss is probably the least famous, but you know Voss.
Yeah, I know Voss. Yeah.
So,
but I've worked with Patrice and Ben Bailey. I've never worked with Voss.
Ben was really fucking great. He is a really great comic. I seem like he's dead. Jesus Christ. I'm really sorry, Ben.
He's a great...
I'm seriously sorry. Ben was the closest of my friends out of all of those.
I worked with him in Nashville and Philadelphia, I think, and he's just so nice and funny. And
greatest guy.
Tells fantastic stories. He's got that ability to tell stories from the show he's on without seeming like he's just constantly trying to remind you that he's on a show.
Yeah, I don't think... He's one of those guys. I think he was very comfortable being a club comic, and he would have been in New York his whole fucking career. And that show came along, and I think he wanted to do it. And he was like, yeah, why not? And
I think it'd be great if they traveled that show a little bit. I don't know if they do. They might.
I think that show's over.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think they did they did a ton of fucking episodes.
Oh, well, I have no idea. I don't. I just always thought it'd be fun to, like, have it in Miami and have it in
the funniest
LA and have it in San Francisco and Chicago. Like,
yeah,
the thing that I like about Ben Bailey, or no, I was talking
but the to, payoff the payoff there's no payoff in production to take that show on the road,
right,
because the show's in the cab,
you know. No, I do like the idea of perhaps adding an element of Ben Bailey has no idea where he's going.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So wait,
I was talking to Nick Griffin about that show, and he was like, I would love that show. And I go, I think the difference between a lot of comics.
I'm
and
more
me
impressed
and
that you spoke with Nick Griffin.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I was on the road with him for a year and we didn't speak once.
I know. I've known Nick for a long time. He's always been really because I'm like a sad sack denim jacket chain smoking.
Yeah.
Like I think I remind him of him.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And you're happy.
We sat in a green room one time in Tampa, and I was fucking rattling off, talking to Nick. I mean, we've been on the road now for probably 4 months, yeah. And I'm talking to him like we're buddies, and he goes, just so you know, I'm not going to answer you. And I go, just so you know, I'm not going to stop talking. He goes, as long as you know you're not getting an answer, I go, that's cool with me. The only time we talked hardcore was when we found out that our road manager had let Penn Jillette eat her out. And we
oh
and
my God.
Fucking Nick could not let go of that. He goes, "You let Penn Jillette EREH?" Like we were in Chicago, and he would not let go of
it. When he got done, did he pull out 50 handkerchiefs?
I actually ate dinner with Penn Jillette. I so badly wanted to ask him if he remembered her. I had dinner with Pendulette and Teller, and with for Trip Flip, and I wanted to bring it up so fucking bad, but there's no way he remembers.
Right?
There's no way he remembers.
Well, me and Nick were talking about Cash Cab, and there's something about, like, me and Nick have this thing in common where it's like, if we had that show, then we always know that we at least have a hack license. We're like, once all this is gone, I can at least drive a taxi. I know how. I have a taxi driver's license. I know my way around New York.
I got a plan B.
Yeah, it's like a television show with a built-in plan B also.
Yeah.
If I'm on Sullivan and Son and they're like, you bartend. I'm like, sweet, if I could finally learn to bartend.
That would be fucking, yeah.
Then I could send a tape, try to get a job at some bar downtown and be like, what's your experience? I'm like, watch this.
Oh, and you could get fucking tons of work if you played a bartender on TV and then just fell back into, like, if Woody Harrelson decided to start bartending, do you know how popular that bar would be?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great fallback plan, is Woody Harrelson and what's his name?
How great would that be as a show where Woody Harrelson just decides to buy a bar and, it's like a TV show where he plays himself buying a bar.
And they're like,
I guess I got to do this now.
And then the whole time all he did was quoted his movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Mallory. I love you.
He's always talking about, he wants to talk about everything except Doc Hollywood.
Except for, was he in, oh, yeah, he was Doc in Doc Hollywood.
He just doesn't want to, people are just constantly quoting Cheers at him and he's disappointed.
He's like, yeah, guys, there's more to my career.
I did other stuff.
Yeah, I did.
Really?
Everyone, there's some guy that, some asshole that sits out front that really, like, Michael J. Fox, who does not like Woody Harrelson's career. Yeah. Just because, like, look, there's no reason you took off and got a serious acting role. So it's like distill the animosity from Doc Hollywood. And he's like, guys, just ask him about Doc Hollywood. And Okay, so I went to Scotland with those guys, and then I got a TV deal, and I'm in the middle of Scotland, like halfway through the tour, not halfway, a little bit past the tour. I've moved to LA, and that's when I moved to LA for good. So probably 2000, I moved to LA for good.
I feel like in 2000, there was probably more, like, there's always been that coastal, almost jealousy of, or whatever, like, the ones, like, New York is the comics, and LA is the actors.
Yes,
and
I
feel like 13, 14 years ago, it was even more so like that. Like, there's a lot of legitimate comedians in Los Angeles.
There's been a big, I think, change. I don't know if maybe the Comedy Store brought it on, or the Laugh Factory definitely did not bring it on. But right.
The Laugh Factory is, I don't want to say anything bad, but there's almost like a definite brand to their comedians.
There's a definite brand to
when
their comedians.
When you see them on the road, you're like, oh, that's a Laugh Factory comic. Yeah. Like, you can almost tell.
It's why I never really fit in there, because I was like, I did a couple sets and I don't know. Jamie just didn't shine to me. He was like, you go long, and I was like, I never really went long, but like, I'm sure he looked at my act and was like, oh, I'm already done with it.
Yeah.
But
I also heard that it doesn't, like, if you already have management.
Oh yeah, it doesn't help in as a middle, like, mildly successful comic who has a TV show and a manager but hasn't blown up, and, you know, doesn't help. Yeah. You know, but he's a nice guy. I'm not shitting on Jamie. He's a really nice guy. But I never really clicked with that
scene. I've never even been there.
There's nowhere to hang out. It's like you can hang out in the back, but you can't really talk. And
I don't know anybody that works it regularly. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know anyone either there. But I also don't fit in at the Comedy Store. Like, I go over there and hang out, like, if I do something there. And I always get along with everyone there. But, like, I'm not – I don't want to do, like, the fucking – I refuse to do the audition, the four-minute audition for Mitzi. I don't know if she even does it anymore. It was like the improv. You could just go in and work out, and you can stop in and work out. The Ice House is fucking amazing. Flappers is amazing. There's three clubs. I'm home 2 days a week. Like, what? I don't need two other clubs that are
– right.
You know, Flappers and fucking Ice House are actually shorter drives for me than the store and finding parking. It's like,
oh, yeah, you moved out to the valley.
I'm in the valley. So, but yeah, I mean, I always consider the improv my home club, because that's where I started.
That was when I moved there, they started having me up all the time.
They had a good way of looking at working that club, and they also had a lot more payout. Like the Comedy Store is more like, you got to earn your bones, son. You got to pay your debt to society to be a comic. You got to work the door. I'm like, I have a fucking TV show. I'm not going to work the door. I'm not going
to. Yeah, you have to earn your. You have to pay your dues there.
Yeah, there.
The improv is like the improv seemed like. Oh well, you've been on the road for 5 years. You did Gotham. You know.
How about we get you into Irvine, Brea?
Yeah, they
and
did that,
Ontario, they did and you can host and feature and headline off nights. And it's like you're going to give me the opportunity to do an hour. I'm never getting that opportunity with Jamie. Like Jamie can go. I can give you 7 minutes a week, buddy. And you're like, great. Thanks. I'm going to pass because I don't, there's nothing I want to talk about for 7 minutes.
It takes me 15 to park.
Yeah. It takes me, yeah. So, and I'm not shitting on the club. They're all great clubs, and Jamie's a great guy, and whoever's running the Comedy Store is awesome. I'm sure. I don't know who's running it, but whoever it is a great person.
The reason why I never tried to work the Comedy Store is when I would go there, like the people I knew were people that were regulars there are people that I found. Like, I was still a little intimidated by and whatever. Like, I knew Maron from the road and Jeff Ross from the road.
There used to be. I mean, there still is. There still is. The guys that do that club are mostly my friends, and they're all fucking great comics. And I swear to God, I wish I could just get plugged into that club and show up and just start doing regular spots. But I do not. I will not waste the time of not seeing my daughters to work my way up a chain that there is no payoff to.
Right.
You know? Because all I need is one big thing of the thing I'm already doing. I'll just step in whenever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
Like, Sarah Silverman. I'm sure she didn't work her way up that fucking ladder, but she'll do whatever the fuck she wants there.
Yeah. And it's not like, I guess the payoff is to headline the big room or whatever if there's money in it. If you can go in like Stanhope and work out one of those deals, then that's payoff. But you know what? Stanhope doesn't do the 4 minutes. Like, he just shows up, and they got a big enough room for him, and they know he'll sell the tickets. And
it's all about putting asses in
seats. It's Los Angeles, and
everyone can
fucking...
get. Yeah, everyone can get. Like as my experience is, fucking for all the dues I paid on the road and all the fucking.
There's so many rooms in
all
LA,
the
man.
Asses I kissed on the
Todd
road.
Glass's garage seats 60. Like you don't need.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So wait, let's go back. So you started stand-up in 2003.
Yeah, early 2003, February 2003.
Out of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Engaged.
No, I didn't get... I was dating Lauren, but we got engaged in the end of 2005 and got married at the end of 2006.
And in 2006, I'd met you already.
Yeah, I think we had worked in Atlanta, I think we worked.
Oh, yeah, with Marshall.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a picture of that up at the club.
Yeah, which
is
funny.
Shirtless.
It's me, you, and Marshall shirtless hanging up in the green room of a club he won't book me at.
Why won't he book you?
He said somebody in Atlanta, some open micer, told him I was an asshole.
Well, yeah, but anyone can say that about anybody.
Exactly.
Like, but you can't, there, you
that
can't
was
put
it.
Weight on someone. That's like just someone saying, oh, that guy's an asshole, and then you go, oh.
Yeah, he was like, I can't bring you down
really?
To work here if I can't have the locals. He's like, I like you, but, and I was like, who gives a shit? Like, now I'm done, like. That's how this is run. I can't work there because somebody I know for a fact that somebody from Atlanta, somebody that lived in Atlanta, doesn't live there now, but I know for a fact that somebody that used to live in Atlanta would call clubs I work while I was working and tell them they were funnier than me, and that if they book me, they should book them.
That's such
and then
fucking
one person, and then somebody in Atlanta tells Marshall I'm an asshole. Maybe it's the same person.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the man. It's the truth. Is like. This fucking whole comedy club.
This happened twice where, for sure, where I have a strong enough relationship with the guy who runs the club that he was like, hey, I think you might think this is funny. How many clubs How many clubs have I worked where I don't know the owner that well? And they just don't say it. Like, this is two clubs where the guy, like, I'm actually friends with the people who...
That's negative energy. That's negative energy, and whoever puts that
but
out.
But it's also really stupid because you're calling the person that books the club and telling them they're bad at it.
I can't even comment on that behavior because that's something I would never do, and I can't really wrap my head around.
Even if you are funnier than me, you just called the guy and told him that he's fucking bad at his job because he booked someone not as good.
God, it just makes no fucking
it's
sense.
Wrong all the way around.
Yeah, I like Marshall. I've always liked Marshall, but
it is annoying to me. That every time, because a lot of my friends work that room.
Wait, for the record, though, you are kind of a dick.
No, I was just standoffish then.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a dick, yeah, but I was But not to
but you're
people,
not you're not mean or hateful, but yeah, you are like, you are distant. You're like Tosh. You're just distant.
I was
and you're not someone like me. Like everyone, no, if someone said Bert's a dick, a lot of people will go, you got the wrong guy. Because I'm like, I want everyone to be my friend. I want everyone. You don't care to make new friends. You care to do a good job at the club.
Yeah.
And then for the majority of your career, not drink, go back to the hotel and write.
That was I think that's what it came from, was I had this reputation.
Ian Bagg got the same rap too.
I didn't drink
and
Ian
Bagg got it all real bad because I went to Denver one time and they were like, I said something like, oh, have you seen Ian Bagg yet? And they're like, oh, we don't like him. I was like, why not? And they're like, you know what? Got to be dead honest with you. Comes in, goes to the green room, doesn't talk to anyone, goes on stage, like takes autographs or takes pictures, and then just fucking leaves. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of what a healthy comic would do.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about the unhealthy one, like me, who gets there and then fucking talks to everyone and then fucking finds out who's fucking who. And then I hang out with you guys until 2 a.m. and then I go back to someone's house and we eat Girl Scout cookies. Like that's – but that's what clubs want.
I started drinking and then I do that. I do all that now.
Yeah.
But I just didn't drink for a long time. So I would go in, do the job, and then go back to the hotel because it's not – I don't know if people know this, but it's not the most fun in the world to just hang out in a bar when you don't drink.
Oh, yeah. It's not. It's miserable.
Yeah. And no one ever is like – nobody at any club is ever like, hey, you want to go to Waffle House?
Yeah.
They're always like, we're going to go to this fucking – they've got foosball and $3 shots. And you're like, oh, I don't – you know, I don't drink. And foosball's only marginally fun when you're drunk.
Only I'd say less than marginally.
Yeah, but in that way that anything is fun when you're hammered, just trying to figure out how things work. You're like, I just push this.
I'm turning it the wrong way.
This is wild.
Yeah.
I kicked it so into
that's,
my own
that's
goal.
Probably where you got the rap of being a dick, but then you started drinking. Well, then let's – so we'll keep on this timeline. So then you start doing the road. I did the road with you a bunch. You did some with Tom Segura.
I've worked with him.
But you worked with Birbiglia. You worked with a lot of really big names. Me, Birbiglia, Tom Segura.
I did 6 months with Birbiglia in 2007.
Yeah, he doesn't drink though, does he?
No.
Yeah, so that was probably fucking great.
Yeah, it was a different town every night, so it was...
Go do activities in the afternoon.
There was just no time for really anything. It was like, you do the show, and then you either drive to the next gig after the show, or you go to the hotel because you have to get up in the morning.
And this was pre... movie producer, successful Hollywood Mike Birbiglia.
This was stand-up comedian Mike Birbiglia. Yeah.
I'm doing the road. I'm a comic Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Birbiglia he was big in colleges. Half the tour was colleges. Half of it was like 700 seat theaters.
God damn it.
It was a lot of fun, and
there's
learned a lot.
There's so much money to be made in comedy if you can simply write smart and clean, like just not.
If you
fucking,
can just be great at it, you can get
no.
A
but
lot
like,
of,
but like, there's if I had focused my energy of all the dick, maybe I, you know what? Let me take that back. Let me just credit Mike Birbiglia and Daniel Tosh. So they're two fucking huge names, but they made fucking killings with money when they were like 25.
Yeah,
just because they didn't have an interest in writing dick and shit jokes and fucking race jokes. They wanted to write fucking smart, you know, fucking clean material, and they could do anything, and they weren't terrified going into college. They had an act to do. I'd do a college and I'd fucking panic and I'd be like, where are the black people? Oh shit, they're on the basketball team. Oh god, this is gonna be awkward.
Yeah, they also have I mean, it is some genetic lottery almost, where they're like, they also seem very likable.
Yeah.
Tosh goes out of his way on stage to present himself as unlikable, but it's already too late. Like, that's why he can get away with it, because the minute he walks on stage, everyone's like, this
guy smiles.
Cool.
You're like, oh, and it's like, he's got it. Yeah, I agree totally.
He walks on stage like the coolest guy in the room, and Birbiglia walks on stage like your friend. Like, he's already your friend. Like, without saying a word, both of them have already established.
Yeah, I take back that statement. Don't think that you can just copy their careers. Their careers are hard earned, but I will say.
Well, and
there's so much money out there for fucking mediocre acts too.
Yeah, well, there's hundreds of people that have that ability to be likable the minute they take the stage and never put the work in to get the rest of it to work. So it's not saying, look at that grin, that's why they're successful.
Yeah.
They're both
brilliant comedians.
They did everything possible.
I hope that doesn't sound cunty. So you used to do the road with Birbiglia.
Yeah.
You do the road with us, and then you get married.
Yeah.
And then,
and we're,
dun, dun, dun.
We were married for 4 years. We split up in August of 2010 on my birthday.
You moved out to L.A. Are you serious?
Yeah, it was on my birthday.
You moved out to L.A.
Moved out to L.A.
You convinced her to move out to L.A. She worked for her dad. She,
well,
had
she
like
wanted to move.
Yeah, because she could read.
She
could,
picked L.A.
Yeah.
I always kind of thought New York was better for me because I'm not – like I have no interest in seven-minute sets. I have no interest in auditions. I don't know anything about that unless there's you know, producers or management listening and I'm taking lessons. I'm really good at it. I just always like stand-up comedy is my favorite part of stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
None of the rest of the stuff compares. And you can do so much more stand-up comedy in New York because it's, you know, Manhattan, the distances between the clubs, even the furthest club from the furthest club is still not close to what LA is.
Yeah.
Like you could do, there's three clubs you could probably do in a night, and those are just the three in Hollywood.
Yeah.
The Factory, the Store, and the Improv, because they're kind of concentrated. But then if you got to hit Burbank, that's 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
Ice House is 45, whatever. Irvine, the last
Irvine,
Long
yeah,
Beach.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
These clubs, the Ventura, like these clubs are so spread out that you might be able to do two sets in a night.
And I think Colin Quinn has the record for doing like 12 sets in one night.
Yeah.
Colin Quinn. Steve Byrne tried to break it.
I thought he did. Didn't he?
Did he break
made
it?
A documentary?
Yeah. Yeah. He did. Steve Byrne broke it. I don't know how many he did.
Yeah, but that always seemed like there's one of them happened just because he was booked and one of them happened because he was trying to beat the record. Like that always seemed funny to me that it was like, can you believe that I pulled this off? Yeah, I can. It's not like you start at 6, you go to 2 in the morning.
I haven't seen the documentary, but I'm sure it's on YouTube. What? So wait. So then you guys moved to L.A.
We lived there for 8 months or whatever.
Yeah.
She still lives there. So she's coming up on 3 years.
Really?
She's lived there for 3 years. I lived there for...
You're doing the road.
7 or 8 months, yeah.
And then you get back one weekend.
Yeah, I have to go out of town for... We don't have a lot of money. I'm trying to find a job in L.A. I can't find a job in L.A. There's no fucking jobs in L.A.
Yeah.
And I had people were trying, like... I only know comics, but then those comics know bigger like I think David Spade asked the general manager of a Cheesecake Factory to hire me, and he wouldn't. He just couldn't. He was
really?
Like, there's nothing I can do.
He's
like, I don't know Spade. I've never met him. I don't even think I've been within. I've never been in the same room as him. I've never been. I don't think I've ever been within a mile of David Spade.
Yeah.
But I think he was eating there with Todd Glass, and Todd told him. And like Todd was like, I'm gonna ask the general manager if he'll hire my friend Jeff. And Spade was just like, I'm more famous than you. Let me ask. Something
oh, that's
like that.
Fucking. That's great.
Like a hilarious like in that classic David Spade.
David Spade should have just gotten you a job on one of his TV shows.
Yeah, why not? But does he have one?
Yeah, I'm sure he's always had one.
Oh yeah, you're right.
He's had one for as long as he's ever been in television.
Right, Ace of Spades. Come
Ace
on,
of
let
Spades.
Me work for his. Production company.
Happily Next Door Neighbors. Like, or I know.
Happily Next Door Neighbors?
Whatever the thing is with Stucky.
What? Who's Stucky?
Stucky from Seinfeld.
Oh, Putty.
Putty and David Spade, and I'm sure fucking.
Some black guy.
No, yeah. I don't think there's any black people in this one.
What? Is it on CBS? No,
it's on ABC. I've never seen it, but it's like Unhappily Neighbors or Unmarried.
Oh, is it
Uncomfortably
Rules
Yours?
Of Engagement.
Rules of Engagement, something like that. Some name that has I have no connection to. Like back in the day, the names of a fucking sitcom like meant like you could like you knew what the sitcom was. Roseanne,
yeah,
you know,
it's
like
her.
Fucking The Norm Show. Like you knew what you were getting. The Drew Carey Show. You knew what you were getting when you got there. Now it's like 8 and a half rules to not date my daughter, and you're like, so is the whole thing going to be about rules not dating your daughter? Like,
how many of these episodes are going to be about when that guy dies? But he died. He totally died.
Yeah. John
Ritter.
Yeah.
I'm not.
I won't even make fun of it because I'm afraid I'm going to go from the same fucking heart attack.
Well, that's why I called this album I Got Potential, because I think everyone who knows me knows I have a lifestyle where my last album will be released posthumously. There's no. There's no you have 6 months left, Jeff. There's none of that going on in my lifestyle. It is. He did what?
So wait. Oh now, so that's a departure from where we left off. You were sober. You were married.
Yeah, was sober.
Not,
yeah,
not drinking by choice.
Yeah, by choice.
And then
I actually started drinking in Los Angeles, but not for any other reason other than a lot of those shows in LA, you don't get any money for it, but they will be like, oh, you can get two beers at the bar. And then you're like, well, I got to get something out of this. And these beers are $9 each. So
yeah.
At least I can get those two. And that's like they gave me $20.
Yeah.
So I would drink two beers or whatever. I always liked drinking. I was always really good at it or bad at it, depending on whether or not you're my parents.
So then you get divorced.
Yeah,
you moved back in with her parents or something?
No. I moved in with my parents.
Oh, okay.
I came back to Cincinnati right away. Like, as soon as we split up, it was sleep on a couch time. And I was like, well, I'm not going to stay here. I'm not going to just sleep on, like, a friend's couch. I'm not going to try to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's the other interesting part about moving to a town from out in the middle somewhere is I go to L.A. and all the comics I know are headliners because I'm a middle on the road. So everyone that I've met on the road was a headliner. So I walk into the improv and I don't know anybody in the room except Jeff Ross.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know anybody except Craig Robinson.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so the people I know are, they're older, they tend to have families or they're very busy. Like I can never be like, hey, Jeff Ross, can I sleep on your couch for an indefinite period of time?
Yeah.
Like I know you, but you have two daughters and a wife. Segura's got a wife.
You could have crashed on Segura's couch, probably.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that to his relationship.
Saying. So you go home.
Like, I don't know a single guy my age with an apartment by himself.
He wasn't out there yet, I don't think.
No, he wasn't out there yet. And when he moved out there, he immediately moved in with the lady that he's with, and now they have a baby.
What?
Yeah.
Tommy Johnigan has a kid?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I can't remember her name, but I think the baby was born last, like, September.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I heard Tommy on this podcast.
He's got this girl named Heather. It was a really nice lady. She came out too.
I worked with him when he didn't drink.
Yeah.
I worked with him in Penguins in Iowa, and he didn't drink at all. And he was like, nope, just never really interested in it. And then we did Brouhaha.
Now he's
all of us did Brouhaha, and he was like, fucking let's get ripped.
He drank almost a bottle of Jameson and then ripped a toilet paper dispenser off the wall of a Steak and Shake.
That's what I'm fucking talking about. That's called living life right there. Thank you, Tommy Johnigan.
I don't want to be too specific about this, but I worked a club first time I was ever there. And I went out with the staff on Thursday night and they were doing Jager bombs and there was always one for me. And Jager bomb is the worst idea for drinking because it'll get you so drunk, but there's enough Red Bull in it that you're still standing.
Yeah.
And then you're like fucking like this is why things get smashed up. Because it's like in the 70s, like with the drinking and the cocaine. It's like
the drinking
has a built-in stopper.
It's got a governor on it.
Yeah, it does.
It's got a governor. And
you can only do so much of it. And that's why I tend to just like I just drink beer because you'll barf your guts out before you get alcohol poisoning from beer.
Yeah, and you'll pass out definitely well before. Yeah.
And so, but when you're mixing Red Bull or it's like Jager bombs, people think like people drink Jager bombs like it's not crazy. But imagine if I went to a bar and I just drank 14 Irish coffees. Like you'd be like, this guy's out of his mind. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen anybody do.
I said last night there was this woman who's so fucking drunk, and I'm in a zone on stage right now. So I'm like, she was like, I was saying something about black women, and there were black women in the room, and I were having to go back and forth, like a fun back and forth about white boys and what they didn't like about white boys. And then this woman in the front was hammering. She goes, can I ask the black girls a question? And I was like, and in my head, I'm like, let's ride the lightning. Let's see how this goes. So I just handed her the microphone. I handed her the microphone, and a woman in the back goes, why would you give her a microphone? And then she couldn't articulate what she was saying. And I was like, I think they should create an alcohol that paralyzes your vocal cords after you've had too much of it.
Yeah.
So you can't speak anymore, and you're just like, I'm going to go home.
I honestly, like, I know it's been mentioned a lot, and I'm not doing this as to be like, check out this new joke for my act. I actually think it's a brilliant idea, and you can make $1 billion if you can put some sort of breathalyzer thing on a cell phone. Like, not to ever mention it on an app.
Well, I think there should be breathalyzers on your cell phone that then shut down all your devices.
Yeah,
your car doesn't work. In order to work your cell phone, you've got to, because no one gets into their car to drive without calling someone first to find out if they're awake. You know? Yeah. So, like, there should be a breathalyzer, and once it goes, sorry, buddy, you're well past.
Yes, Siri. Siri kicks in. You are fucking hammered.
You can use your phone if you opt out of using your car.
The only thing you can do with your phone, your phone shuts down, the only thing you can do is Yelp hotel reviews.
Yeah.
Or find that, or use that Find a Taxi app. Like, those are the only two apps that'll work. Everything else is done. Like, and it would be, it's just insane. I feel like my car should have a thing where if I put an Aerosmith album into the CD player, the whole car should shut off.
Why Aerosmith?
Because I like Aerosmith a lot when I'm hammered.
Some Tom Petty albums.
Yeah?
Yeah, because you were obsessed with Tom Petty.
Yeah,
and
I love Tom Petty.
What's the song? I bought a couple albums just to hear one song.
Really? have you not heard of iTunes? Or did you just not know the name of the song?
I didn't know the name of the song, and so I bought fucking like four albums just so I could get one song.
You know you could have called me, said one sentence from the song.
Sorry. This is not it. Everybody know Juicy always turned up to a blood smoke dot. Everybody perped up. That's right. It's the remix. It's the fucking remix. It's the remix. Tom Petty. I'm fucking obsessed with Kesha.
Is that Kesha?
PQRS. This is a remix.
I thought Kesha was a girl.
Yeah, but this is Wiz Khalifa.
Wiz Khalifa is the name of a person?
Yeah. Don't even get me started. I'm fucking obsessed.
I'm like, I feel like I'm 100 years old sometimes.
This song. Name it.
You don't know how it feels.
Yeah. One of the best lyrics. I just heard the lyric and I was like, it's such a great fucking lyric. And I just was like, something that I just was like, God damn, I want to be in Gainesville right now.
Well, you know Gainesville because you're from Florida.
Yeah.
I've actually sat on a... I've just sat on the hood of my car once and listened to the cars roll by on 441 because that's from American Girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is the lyric that really fucking caught me, and I was like, shut the fuck up right here. Let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio loud. I'm too long to be proud. You don't know.
I like this. The second
I'm too
half
alone to
I'm
be
too
proud.
Alone to be proud.
Fucking literally kicked me in the dick, and I was like sitting in my bed, and I'm fucking, and I goes, let's get to the point, let's roll another joint, turn the radio loud, cause I'm too alone to be proud. And I'm just like, you don't, and I'm like, holy shit, Tom, I'm buying fucking a bunch of albums now, but that's the only good song on that album.
Fuck you.
Tell me some more good Tom Petty songs.
That album has Wildflowers, which is one of my favorite songs ever.
Really?
That album has, it's got Honeybee. I love this song.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if I'm getting sued right now. Who gives a shit?
Right? I think that could be the best thing that ever happened to you. I got a bit about McDonald's on my album, and I was like, are we allowed to do this? And he goes, if they sue us, we'll be in newspapers.
So let's get to the most interesting part of your life, and that is you leave L.A., you start drinking again, and you start to fucking live life to a place where I start seeing awesome pictures of you on Twitter having awesome fucking times with awesome fucking people. I saw a picture of you and Rogan behind a bar, I think, and Stanhope. You start touring with Stanhope. You start fucking literally charging the fucking – I mean
– Every time I've tried to quit – or whatever, things seem to happen. Like, I was done, and I ended up on Ferguson accident.
Yes, Marin, and you talk. Yeah, go ahead, keep going.
Oh.
No, just I leave just, that on the couch.
No, I actually need it because I need to the feed the meter.
Just leave that on the couch.
I ended up doing a...
Ferguson, by the way, who I just fell in love with the other night. I don't think I've ever really watched his show because I was like, oh, it's the boss from Drew Carey. I know that's so fucking stupid that I said that out loud.
I forgot. I honestly forgot that he was the boss from Drew Carey until I saw him when I was doing the show, when I went to do his show and he walked out. And I was like, oh, fuck, I've been watching you on TV since I was 15.
Yeah.
Like, and this,
then,
like,
but then I saw him interview some author, and I was like, holy shit, he is a great. He's engaged. He's smart as fuck. He's not scared. He's never fucking backed down. Like, he's really on top of it. He's quick as fuck. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to start watching this fucking show. Like, he's good.
Really
so
funny.
And then your story that you told made me fucking love this guy. So you go to do Ferguson.
Well, I'm doing – well, let's start at the beginning. I'm doing Wichita. Looney Bin in Wichita. Middling for Jim Short.
Great comic.
Super fun. Yeah, it was a I've done Wichita with Robert Hawkins and
great
Jim
comic.
Short and a handful of other people.
You're
I
also you and Tommy Jonigan are the reason that I know of comics like I know Henry Phillips, but you guys are the reason that I know Henry Phillips, because you guys are like oh, he's fucking Henry Phillips is amazing.
Chad Daniels.
I still have never seen him live. I was in Minnesota. I was going to call him. I was going to send a tweet to see if he'd do my podcast, but I don't know him, and I don't want to bother him, and he's with his family. But Chad Daniels is another one. Like, you guys were champions of, like, Robert Hawkins, like, of the guys that are road dogs.
Well, Tommy came from St. Louis, and I came from Cincinnati, and we always, like, we started in road clubs, and we started around road comics, and we started on the road.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you get lucky. Like, that's how I found out about you. I think I was supposed to work. We worked together at the Funny Farm.
Yeah, Funny Farm in Atlanta.
Yeah, and that room is ridiculous. Like, you can hear skee-ball machines and stuff.
I love that room. I love that fucking room.
And it's awesome when there's a lot of people there.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah. And the new one has a weird dead spot in the
middle. I think the new one's dead, too. There's no more Funny Farm.
Okay. That's good. But I had never worked with you before or seen, cause it becomes like, I never watched Ferguson, not because I had any problem with Ferguson or because I had any, I just stopped watching all of those shows when I was on the road.
Yeah. You just wanted the time for it. It's not like, you'd watch it in a green room is when you'd watch it.
And then I think the first time I saw an entire episode of Ferguson was when he was taping, when I was there. So I'm in Wichita, Midland. Ferguson and Ted Alexandro is opening for him, and they do a big theater in a casino outside Wichita, and then they just walk into the club 5 minutes before the second show starts.
That's fucking...
There's 25 people there, and they're all drunk. Late show Friday in Wichita. If you are a comic and listening to this, you just got chills up your spine because you know what that feeling is.
Yeah.
25 people, they're already drunk at some Midwestern nowhere town with late show. Just the late show Friday is historically bad.
Yeah.
And then this guy walks in, and the guy who was hosting was like, maybe he'll put us on the show. And I was like, the minute you think that, the minute is you have 25 people there you have to worry about. Like, do good in front of them and just
don't audition for him. Do what you do in this room. He'd rather see you work that room well than do a tight five.
Yeah. And believe me, I did not do a tight five. And I did not. I've tried to forget he was there. My main concern was, I've worked with Ted Alexandro, and he's a guy I'll see.
Yeah.
Like, I'll see him in New York or on the road or whatever. Like, I have a much better – and all I was trying to do was, like, I just want to do this 30 minutes and not have Ted Alexandro think I got worse at stand-up since the last time he saw me. And I did it, and then the next day, a couple of days later, I got called from the guy who books the show and was like, hey, I just sent you an email. Craig saw you at the Wichita Funny Bone and wants you on the show. And I was like, are you serious? He goes, yeah, it's his show. He can do
it's fucking
he wants.
Great. That makes me like Craig Ferguson beyond belief.
Then I'm on, and I told that story a couple of times around, like, and he's done it a handful of times. Chad did the show for the same reason.
Chad Daniels?
Chad opened for him at a casino in Minneapolis. And before the show happened, he was in the green room talking to him. And there was some, like, Craig brought some guy's name up, and Chad was immediately like, fuck that guy. And he was, whoever it was. And Craig was like, that takes balls. You don't even know if we're friends or not. And he goes, listen, I'm sorry if you are friends with him. That guy's a dick. Fuck that guy. And Craig was like, you're funny. You want to do my show?
Oh, I wonder who that guy is.
I have no idea. Chad wouldn't even tell me.
Oh, fucking Chad Daniels.
I'm not leaving his name
out of respect. Will you, everyone, please email, tweet Chad Daniels and tell him he should do my podcast?
Because follow Chad Daniels.
Follow Chad Daniels.
At Chad Daniels, and then, 34.
And be like, oh my God, you should tell, when next time you're in LA, fucking definitely. Oh, I'd fucking love to know who that guy is.
But whoever it was Craig just thought it was funny. I was like, you want to do my show? And Chad was like, are you serious? He goes, yeah, it's my show. It's the Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. I'm Craig Ferguson. And Chad was like, you haven't even seen me do stand-up. And he goes, eh, I think you're funny. You're funny right now. I'm sure you know how to do stand-up.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah. So then, God, I kind of want to do stand-up on Craig Ferguson now.
So then he went to – so after that show, Chad went home, and Craig was like, are there any clubs around where I can go? And Chad's like, yeah, go to Acme. He's like, I'll call. They'll take you in the back door, get the salmon or whatever, or like the walleye or whatever. He's like, they have amazing some fish dinner there. So Craig goes there, watches that show, and then the kid who was hosting that show, he booked him too. Brian
Miller.
Jesus
Christ. You just put the fear of God into anytime Craig Ferguson walks into a show, someone's like, someone's getting booked. Everybody, top material.
No. Don't do that.
Yeah,
the minute you do that, that's when you don't get it. I guess Craig Ferguson likes comedians. So if you just go do comedy, like, he's also the one where, like, it doesn't seem like he's not like, oh, this guy was like cursing a lot, so I don't think he can do the show. He's more like, oh, you're
just cleaning
you
up.
You just worked this fucking Wichita room that you, like, by all accounts, we all should have bombed.
Let's see where Craig Ferguson is right now.
But we still worked it.
Let's see if he's in fucking Cincinnati. Craig.
Oh, my God. Is there any way? Do you ever take breaks on your show?
No, you have to go to the bathroom?
No, it's
you have to put something in the meter?
I have to put something in the meter because I can only find a 60-minute spot.
Come on.
I don't know. How much is this? Is the Burt cast going to be able to spring for a ticket?
No, we don't have much of a budget. Craig Ferguson tour dates.
Just be a comic and you'll end up on that show.
Craig Ferguson tour dates. Let's see. Okay. Oh, fuck. He's not on tour right now.
Just go check it out. Just do good. It's fun. It's fun to do it on. Also, I did it twice because the first one didn't go.
Oh, here we go. 2005 tour dates. Oh, shit.
2005?
He's not on tour. No, 2013. Jesus Christ. 2011. He tours a lot. I didn't even know he did stand-up.
Well, he started as a stand-up and then got the... and.
Well, clearly. I'm sure he didn't... like, you know, there's more money to be made out there.
There is, but you know how many people do that.
Yeah, of course. But
My brother just saw Joel McHale at the casino.
Joel definitely did not start as a stand-up.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's not funny or anything. Yeah. I'm simply saying Joel McHale was on television and then started doing stand-up.
Yeah, and a lot of guys do that.
Because it's almost like – it's like the reverse of that hack license thing for Ben Bailey. It's like
when
you get a TV show, it comes with a built-in safety net because stand-up exists.
I don't mind it. I used to mind it when I was younger. And I was like,
"Oh, it infuriates me." The thing that I've
really
the thing. Well, I don't know what you're going to say.
No.
I've dedicated my life to, and I've tried to get really good at, and I treat with respect and whatever. The minute your thing goes off the air, you decide. Well, I used to get famous stapling my balls to my legs on TV. Now I'll just do it at the improv. I'll just go to Orlando and do it six times, and then
I know what you're saying.
But then, there's five or six guys that have no business doing stand up. Or that were never comics or could do anything are now working.
Why it frustrates you and doesn't frustrate me. It used to frustrate me.
Well, it doesn't take gigs from you.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it is. For me, it actually brings more people into the club.
Well, I know
so, like,
that I'm
Steve-O
not.
Steve-O goes in and from what I'm told, he actually does stand up now. Like, he does. I didn't think he does light himself on fire at the end of the show, but. I think he does stand up too, but in my head, what happens is then all the Steve-O fans go in and they see me on the folding card, and that's like as opposed to bringing in D-list comic name who's $1,300 a night,
right.
And they go in and they bring in 40 people on a fucking Late Show Friday, and only 40 people see my name. Steve-O's there; it's sold the fuck out. He's the highest drawing comic I think on the road right now. It's him and Tom Green and like all the ones that you dislike are all the biggest drawing comics on the road.
Tom Green, I like. I've never seen him do stand-up, but he did Brouhaha last year.
Well, he started as a stand-up at like
but
13.
He did the spot that you did last year at the
really?
Brouhaha. And Mikey was walking him around, and then he's got to go do something. And I was standing there, and he goes, hey, and Tom Green was just like, hey, walk with me. Let's go get beers. He just didn't want to walk by himself, which makes sense. Like, you need somebody around when you're Tom Green. And so we're having a conversation, and he goes, He goes, how long have you been doing stand up? And I go, oh, you know, a while. It's been, you know, a long time, nine years or whatever. And he goes, do you still like it? I go, not really. And he goes, oh, you must be pretty good. And I was like, that immediately I was like, oh, this guy fucking gets it. Like, he understands. It's like,
I think he might have started as a stand up or started as a rapper. I forget. I know he was like, I had a rap deal. Like, he had he had a rap deal. And then got in doing a show, which is, you know, a natural extension of what you're going to do if you're into entertainment and you're fun. And you're, I mean, you look at anyone's Vine these days, they're doing Tom Green bits almost exclusively. And so then, and then he did his show. And then, you know, and then I think his career is just one of those. He's that small little fucking angel's breath of, what is it? Angel's share of comics. Of people in this business that their careers exploded exponentially before they had a chance to control it or slow it down, and they just had people that could make money off of them and just put them in everything they could and had them do everything they could and do this, do that, and I don't think he had control of it. Now he's slowing down, and I think now he has control of it, and this, I think, is what he wants to do. I mean, hopefully this is what would bother me as a purist of stand-up is, say, if Steve-O gets another TV show and then stops doing stand-up.
Right,
like, don't use us. Like,
he totally is.
Well, I don't know. I don't even care. There's no effect on me.
Like, I'm not gonna headline the room that Steve-O headlines. That's not what bothers me at all.
No, but you could have. We talked about this last time. You could have. I got brought into this business at a time that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
I got brought into this business when the David Spades and the you know, I guess Rob Stenner, I don't know if he was doing tour at that time, but Janine Garofalo's, Sarah Silverman's, the big comics were all headlining all the improvs. And then when I showed up, they all kind of stopped and started doing either movies or TV, or, you know, it was just the industry was changing and they needed to fill rooms. They had more rooms than they had comics, and they needed to fill rooms. Guys like me, Ian Bagg, Steve Byrne, Brett Ernst, like all the dudes that are headlining right now, that are probably the middle of the road headliners. We all got in for like fucking $1,300 a weekend. We filled up all those fucking clubs on the dead weekends, and we didn't get much of a turnout. We didn't get much of a feedback. We kind of struggled, but we got in on then. And then what happened is we got kind of grandfathered in, and then reality television exploded, and you had all these people that could then go in and sell tickets, like a Joel McHale. Or although I don't think he ever did improvs, but like Steve-O, Tom Green, Rob Schneider, Kevin Nealon, all these guys that then filled up all the clubs, and now that chance for guys like you to get in doesn't exist. It like there's no way Chad Daniels is going to headline improvs because he can't. He's not like famous enough. It's a weird fucked up.
No, I think he used to. I think he does. But I'm talking like Nick Griffin. You would see his name on improvs, and then Steve-O and those guys started doing it. So Nick Griffin gets pushed down, and he's still headlining every week. But the clubs that he's headlining now, he's took a week from somebody who now has taken a week from me.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Three levels down, and what you're saying
is holds weight is that the genre is becoming watered down because you're not allowing young comics to grow. You're just simply putting asses in seats, but that's the business.
No, I know. But they don't even do that with middles anymore. Do you know how many clubs I go to where they say middles? Like, they don't, like, people that I talk to, my friends, hilarious comedians, are like, oh, they won't book me because you have to have a TV credit to be a middle. I'm like, who the fuck?
Yeah.
That's impossible. You got to get on TV to be a middle?
That is fucked up.
I guess I got in right before that. And then I fortunately have a TV credit, and I still don't have any fucking work.
Yeah,
but I just don't.
No, it's, man, this, yeah, this,
I don't even try.
This business has gotten very convoluted in so many, like,
but it's worked out. Like, you're holding a microphone right now. Like, we're holding a microphone.
Well, that's
right now.
Well, that's the next generation. You just got grandfathered into this generation.
But you can get like, I talk to Tom about this all the time. The clubs still act as if you need to be Brian Regan or Kathleen Madigan to stop working the club. Like, they think you have to sell 1,800 tickets to walk away.
Yeah.
But you only have to sell 50 or 100.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Segura, if Segura goes into a town, he can sell 100 tickets easy and make that money in a night. $15 a ticket.
Well, you start. I understand that because you start doing the math. Like, people, when I went to my new agency, they're like, I think you're ready to do theaters. And I'm like, oh, not at all. But I don't think I highly underestimated how much ticket sales I was going to be having. Because I hadn't done the road. I'd been doing Trip Flip. I'd been working. And then I got on the road and I started selling out all my shows. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, not that I'm ready to do theaters. I wouldn't mind doing another lap of clubs. I love clubs. The club, if I could just shorten the week. I love clubs.
Right. But you can.
But you're right.
Tremendously.
You look at what's
you don't need
Neil Brennan. Neil Brennan does theaters now, or does theaters, but like smaller theaters.
Yeah,
and I don't think he even does clubs, but he can sell them.
200 seats. You know, you go into a theater. Well, yeah. Seats 200, 300. I mean,
we figure you move 1,200 tickets in a weekend is a great weekend for the clubs. That's their goal for every club. If you move 1,200 tickets in a weekend. If you move 1,200 tickets in a weekend, you could probably move 600 in one night.
Yeah.
If you could sell one night, you could move 600. But you got to be selling out. Like, you need people to be going, well, what shows do you have available left? I mean, but you're right. And this podcasting thing, this genre is now, like, it's completely different where it's changed a lot of things. It's changed the turnout. Like, I'm shocked at who listens to this consistently.
I'm gonna take advantage of this completely. I'm doing the sinking ship in Indianapolis on June 2nd.
When's that? June 2nd?
June 2nd,
what's
that? Yeah.
What's Sinking Ship?
The Sinking Ship is a punk rock bar in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And it's...
Guys go see it.
It's a Sunday night, and it's fucking like, rad. And I'm doing Monday night in Columbus at a place called Woodlands Tavern.
Benson's got the best fucking grasp on it.
June 3rd, yeah.
Benson's got the best grasp because he's like, fuck it, I'll just go in on Tuesdays and sell my tickets and then bounce.
Or he goes into... Or he'll do like San Francisco... And like, he doesn't even need the weekend to be free just because I want to do a 420 show on Saturday and a 420 show on Sunday. And his shows are over. He's getting done with his shows just a couple hours after Yakov, Smirnoff, and Branson. You know what I mean? Like, Yakov's late show is at 2.
I mean, Benson is – guys like Benson, Stanhope, Rogan, who have redefined the genre. Like, I'm still walking the beaten path of our forefathers in this business of like work the clubs, come December, November, you get your offers for the next year, you fill up your calendar, work the clubs, you hope that your next year's a little bigger, the bonus structure's bigger, you get a percentage of the door, work the clubs, build one club, now you got one club that's a guarantee of this, and like I'm still doing that, but who knows, you know, it's this, I'm really fucking fascinated by the way this is, and I do agree that I can understand your frustration when you see guys like that, but I just
feel like it's disrespectful to the art form. It's why people don't think of this as an art form.
When
somebody who has never done it just does it.
I know that frustration because you think to yourself, hypothetically speaking, that let's say – I won't use a name because I don't want to use a name. And the names we've used, I apologize to those guys because we don't mean to use them as an example. But that simply is just how that is seen, perceived maybe from comics' eyes. And that is not – Jeff's independent opinion or my independent opinion. I think across the board, any comic that's working the clubs that has been doing it for 10 years, that has been struggling, has that opinion. That's just how that's going to work. It's like, listen, if fucking people get pissed off at fucking, you know, someone who just jumps into the business and all of a sudden it's TV show after TV show and everyone's like, well, I've been fucking writing TV for years. It's just that's the way that happens. You get pissed off when you've been dating a girl for 5 years and then all of a sudden someone starts fucking her and you're like, wait, I have to take her to dinner. I
mean, you gotta look at it like this. Like there's other ways. Think about the people who were on TV that are now on the radio. Like Adam Carolla has to understand what I'm talking about because someone took his job.
Yeah.
He had a radio show and now I don't know what it was or what happened, but there are people that were on TV. There's people in the radio station I go to now a lot. There's other stations in there where there's like this guy used to host fucking Current Affair or something and now he's got this like something like that. Like it's not a Current Affair. I can't remember what it is, but he used to be on TV every night and then that went away. So instead of trying to maintain that
he just took a step down
and went to radio.
Yeah.
And so now there was somebody who was good at radio who had that job who now doesn't have that job.
Yeah, but then I guess you could argue Darwinian's like survival of the fittest. And Adam Carolla is someone who I don't think lost any sleep over that and simply went, I'm not going to beat my head against that wall. I'm going to switch positions.
I know. And I'm
and you're doing that.
I'm going around. Like that's why I got the job now so I can do this because it is riskier to not wear clubs. But I'm also not – I'm not going to fucking kiss the ring for $500.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd rather take a chance at making $500 on that Sunday night. Like it's going to be a great show. I know who's on it. Like, it's – come to the show. It's, you know, whatever. It's $10. It's probably cheaper than the club. And I like then that way I can do stand up the way I want to do it and yeah.
Stanhope started that, and that you probably. I mean, you spend enough time with Stanhope, you're going to start to go, fuck, what he's doing is making sense. He's selling tickets, fucking a lot of tickets all over the fucking world.
Like, I look at it legitimately, I will pare it down. Like, Stanhope's going to sell 300 tickets at a bar in Fargo, North Dakota. If I sell 50 at that same bar, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
And if I sell 50 in Sioux Falls, I'm thrilled.
And like, now the way that marketing is, like that, it's like this happens, and then Stanhope retweets it or Rogan retweets it, and then all of a sudden you maybe sell fucking 150, and you're like, holy shit, this is working.
Yeah, and then you just do a good job, and you go back 9 months later.
Yeah.
And you do it on your own terms, and you don't wonder – don't ever have to wonder, am I – like, I hate working in a club where, like – I've been to clubs where they're like, why are you standing here? Like, oh, I'm next. Like, I don't know if you knew this, but I was – like, I – there's a comedy show on this stage. That's why these people are here.
Yeah.
And I'm next. Like, and if you wait 10 seconds, I'll be standing up there with all the lights on me talking, entertaining these people. Like, why are you being an asshole about me fucking – like, where should I be? Outside, smoking, not ready to go? Like, I'm also working. I'm not just a dumb dick who showed up. And you got to do that for $500 if I make half of that in an hour on my own terms, I'm happier.
Well, I think the other thing that people don't understand is that maybe listening to this and go, oh, it sounds like sour grapes. You have no idea how fucking frustrating working your way up the ladder of stand-up is. How many times you have to go into a club nervous that you're not going to do well, nervous that no one will like you, and then you go in, and I think every club will admit this. Everyone gives you fucking attitude right when you get there because they don't know who the fuck you are and you haven't proven yourself to them. And then you go up and you do well and then you're everyone's friend. So it's a weird trade-off because there's clubs I've been to where I bombed. And let me tell you something. No one wanted to speak to me for the fucking week.
Yeah.
And you're like, shit, I'm a fucking national touring headliner. I have TV shows and I'm in Amsterdam to do a TV show that's an international TV show for Showtime. And I go to the comedy store in London and I do the right fucking thing. I call up. I get a spot. It's a small spot, not a big spot. 7 minutes. They green light it. Perfect. They say we can shoot in there because we're shooting for our documentary. And everything is set. The owner, the manager, everyone knows about it. I show up. I've been doing stand-up 13 years at the time. I show up and I'm like, hey, my name's Bert Kreischer. I'm here to do a 7-minute set. And they're like, don't know you, mate. Sorry. Get a ticket. And I'm like, oh no, I'm sorry, Anna. Give the name of the owner. It's not here. Don't know. He didn't say a word. Get in line.
Were you filming that?
Yeah. And I'm like,
that's
and I'm
great
like,
for the
I'm
documentary.
Like, yeah, no. I go, listen, I'm sorry. And then I start going, I don't want to be here. Like, I don't want to be here. I'm uncomfortable. I haven't felt like this in a long time. I'm not in this business to feel like this. I'm like, I want to leave. And they're like, sorry, mate. And I go, well, is there an opportunity maybe that I could speak to a manager? Manager's too busy. And I'm like, I don't know what accent I'm doing, by the way. I think I'm doing Australian. But
I can't tell. Yeah,
but then I was like, okay, well. And they're like, talk to him. And it's a bouncer. And he's like, never heard of you. And I'm like, okay. I understand that neither of you have ever heard of me. But that doesn't mean anything. That just means that you haven't heard of me. Someone has. And I'm responsible for a 7-minute set in there. And I need to talk to someone. And they're like, well, the only person to know would be Jamie. And he's in the DJ booth. And I was like, is there anyone's way someone could possibly go out of their way and be a little fucking Christian right now and go fucking talk to the guy in the DJ booth? And then I'm sitting there. I'm so uncomfortable. They're giving me horrible eyes from the box office. And then finally the DJ comes out and he goes, yeah, you're on the list. And I'm like, thank you. And then
what the fuck?
And so, it gets worse. It gets worse.
Really?
I go back to the DJ booth and he goes, 7 minutes, don't go over your time. He's not being a dick. He's just telling me the rules. Right. I get that.
Right.
I'm like, okay. And he goes, green room's right there. Hang out with the other comics. I walk in. All these comics are fucking straight up cunts. They are such dicks. They are fucking with me to the end of time. Listen, mate, this is the most impressive club in the entire world. You want to be a real comic? You do well here. You don't do over. You don't do this. You don't do that. And let me tell you something. And then I go, joking, thinking they'd get this. I go, is everyone going to speak English in here? And they were like, mate, you're in London. You're in London, mate. Learn where you are. Proper right. Fucking these assholes are such dicks to me that I decide, I don't give a fuck. Gloves are off. I'm going to fucking destroy for 7 minutes and 10 seconds and get off. I walk out on stage and I fucking light that room on fire. I kill so fucking hard. And let me tell you something when I say this. Not London comics across the board. Hilarious London comics. I will tell you the ones on this show were fucking hacks, and they had not been doing the show. I watched them. They had not been doing the show that I could provide, and I destroyed for 7 minutes to the point where the crowd's like standing up. Some and it's New York style comedy. Some dude says something, shut up, fucking dickface, whatever. Just fucking slam a guy, kill him, destroy, get off stage, and their mouths are ajar. They're open? Just literally looking at me with their mouths open, and the biggest asshole of the all looks at me and goes, "So I guess you've done this before." And I was like, "Yeah, I have." I walked out. I was like, "Fuck yes!" And then they were like, "Listen, tell us when you're coming back." And that, but that's the way a club works. Yeah. Is they're all assholes see you murder, and then they're like, "When are you coming back? We'd love to have you back. We'd love to have you back. You did good, great job. You could totally work this room anytime." And you're like, "Well, why wouldn't you treat me like that when I walked in? Why wouldn't you just be kind and go?"
I feel like everybody that works a club or owns a club should go hang out at the Comedy Magic Club for one weekend.
Yeah.
I've never worked that stage. They've never seen me do stand-up. I've shown up with my friends sometimes. They feed me. They're fucking really, really nice.
First time I walked in, they were like, "Hey, you're a comic." And I was like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Come on in, man. Daniel Tosh talked about you." I was like, "Fuck. Comedy Magic is a really beautiful
club."
Just
walk you back to that green room. Here's the menu.
Improv's pretty good, too.
No, improv's good, too.
Flappers is good. There's a lot of really great clubs.
I'm saying that they at Comedy Magic Club, they treated me the same that they would treat the same way they treated Gary Shandling.
Yes.
In the same way they treated Daniel Tosh. And Tosh is on the show, Shandling's on the show. I just know Segura.
Yeah.
Or Dan Gabriel or John Evans or whoever I'm with. I'm just walking in with one of these guys and they're like, "Get some food, have some food. You want drinks? We'll get you drinks, whatever. You're a comic." And I go, "But I'm not even on the show." And they go, "Doesn't matter. You're a comic. We take care of you.
But so what everyone's saying when they go sour grapes, it's very frustrating to work your way up the chain and have that interaction that I had the London Comedy Store, which by the way, I understand that is how the business works. I get it. It just sucks. It just sucks to be a part of that business. And I understand that, and I don't hold grudges. I think that was a great club. I had a blast. They fucking hooked me up with free beer all after that.
Good.
Crowds are fucking amazing. We're talking like Tuesday night, sold out 500 people, packed. And so I'd totally work the club again. But trust me when I know that when I go back the next time, I know for a fact that the same thing's going to happen over again because I'm not a regular. I'm not the guy they know. I'm not famous. So when you hear,
but the next time it'll be a lot easier to be like I just shut up and go get the guy in the DJ booth.
Oh yeah, because I'm like, I'm booked here. I still have a flight over. You're not kicking me out.
Yeah.
So when
500 people on a Tuesday night, this is like
packed.
It sounds like London is like how comedy was 30 years ago.
Dude,
in America.
London is a pretty amazing place to do comedy. I'll tell you right now, you were getting like fucking gut laughs that was like they were black. Like they were fucking, they fucking loved it. They fucking ate it up. And you're just like, "Oh, it's the fucking London's great, man. I want to do comedy in Australia. I heard that's the home run place. Canada is like fucking amazing." Now, America, I love America. I've been doing it there my whole life. But you know, it's like in a weird way. What?
I've never done stand up anywhere outside of America.
Oh, dude.
I want to. But what's funny is, you know, so when you're on a show here and there's somebody with an accent and you're like, "Oh, it's like." Like, and then you go to London, you're like, "Oh, you're the guy with the accent." Like you go you're in the green room, you're like, "Why do all of you guys talk funny?" And then you realize, "Oh, you're the one." Like to them, you might as well sound like John Wayne.
Here's the hard thing. Here's the thing that sucks about Americans is like, I remember watching my buddy Brendan Byrne go up on.
Oh yeah, I met him with you.
Yeah, really?
Him and his kid were there was some like picnic or something before when me and Lauren went with
then,
you and you.
And then me and Leanne took care of his son while he did a show.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. I was going to try to get him on the podcast by enough time. He's going to be back though. But I took him out to Irvine to do a set with me. Or Brea, I was headlining. I was like, "Why don't you come out and do like 15 minutes? You know what's so interesting about American crowds is like I could see them straining to figure out what he was saying.
Yeah.
Like because they were like, "I am not familiar with this." Like, did he say boot? What the fuck's a boot? Like,
well, because it's in England, they watch our TV shows.
Yeah.
And in America, it's like if somebody's like, "Oh, the British one's better." You're like, "Oh, really? Come on." Yeah. Like, that seems difficult. Like, I understand intellectually that the British office is probably better than the American office.
Yeah.
But I watched an episode, and I was doing the same thing where I was like, "I don't understand the words. Like, I don't really get it."
The British office was so fucking groundbreaking for when I saw it. I was on the road. That was the first weekend I ever headlined at the Laugh Stop in Houston with Gary Goldman was my feature. Man,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And and fucking we watched it together, and I was like, this is the fucking greatest show ever.
I believe it. I've just never really I've watched the first episode, and that was it.
Yeah. So in summation, just so everyone knows that we're not being assholes to everyone, the like, because this podcasting, the other thing is there's a lot of hall monitors.
I want to say one other thing about sour grapes. It sucks when you're fucking working your ass off to work your way up the ladder, and then you start to get – like, you get like halfway up the ladder, and then you realize, oh, this isn't even a ladder. Like, I'm in the wrong line. Like, I'm in the beer line. I'm in the beer line, but I haven't got my wristband yet.
Yeah.
Like the rules just keep changing all the time. It's just a fucking – oh, this is the security? I thought this was the security. No, this is the gate line. I need to check – where do I check the back? Oh, that's that line. Like, you're – like – I thought that all you had, I thought that all you did was try real hard, get a lot of laughs, do a good job, and just be easy to deal with.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that's not it at all. Like if you are drunk and partying with the staff, like they're always like, don't party with the staff. But then if you don't, then you don't get booked back. You're an asshole.
Well, you also got to read the club. Like, I don't think Stroop wants you partying with his staff, but like most clubs are like, why didn't you?
Well, Stroop doesn't want you partying with the staff, but the staff wants you to party with them.
Yeah, but like I think Stroop's staff knows full well they're not. But they other like the other things they want is they want, you know, ultimately they want you drinking on stage because it raises their bar sales.
Right, but not a lot. They don't want
but
you to drink
not
a lot.
But they want you to drink a lot. They want you to drink a lot, but not act.
Not be drunk at all.
Sure, come on in. Sure. There's a do not disturb sign in there, isn't there?
I don't know. Are they really going to come in?
Hey, how you doing?
Are you ready for service?
Oh, no. We're doing... Fresh towels would be fantastic. Thank you
so
much.
Add some extra soap, please. I'm taking that soap with me.
You know what I do? You know what I should do?
What?
Is show her what will the maid think and see what she thinks.
Really?
Yeah, why not, right?
You want to show her that? Will I go put money in the meter so I don't get a $150 parking ticket?
Sure. And I'll okay, where are we at? A minute, an hour 20. Okay.
Hour 20? I'll be right back.
Here, let me see the other mic. I'm going to give it to her. All right, guys. I might have to edit this out. Simply if the woman doesn't want to do it, I'll just edit it out and pick it up where Jeff left off.
Yours?
No, there's in it. Yeah, I'm definitely editing this out. All right. Let's see. Here we go. What will the maid think? All right, when she comes in. Let's see, I'll give her. We'll see where she is. I'll go to this. Yes. Can you come here for a second? I'd love to show you something and get your opinion. I'm doing you can just put it right on the bed. It's fine.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you very much. Yes. Wait, come here. Uh-huh. Here, take this microphone. I'm doing a podcast. Do you know what a podcast is?
Uh-oh.
Here, you got to talk on the microphone like this. Uh-huh. It goes on the internet. Uh-huh. Here, hold the mic up to your mouth so I can hear you.
That's what to say.
Just I'm going to show you something, and I want your opinion. Okay.
Okay.
So I do this thing on the road where I leave hotel rooms in an interesting manner, so the maid can see them, and it makes her laugh. Okay. Uh-huh. So now I'm going to show you them, and you you tell me what you think. Okay. But hold the mic up to your mouth so we can hear you. Just tell me what you think. Just I'm going to show you the picture, but hold the mic up here. What's your name?
Ajara.
Ajara? Mm-hmm. Okay, where are you from?
I'm from West Africa.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where in West Africa?
Hmm?
Sierra Leone?
Ivory Coast?
Mm-hmm. Ivory Coast? Okay. Okay, so these are the things I leave in the hotel room. You tell me what you think, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like this, where I put that in the refrigerator, and it just...
What is it?
It's... Hold the mic up to your mouth so we can hear you laugh. It's going to sound like you had a stroke. So look at this. This is, I do this to the toilet.
Oh, wow.
And then this is one I did in Dallas. That's a dog.
Are you serious? Wow.
Wait, look at this one. Does that look real?
It look real.
It does. That's just pillows and towels with boots and my shirt.
You serious?
I swear to God. I make these myself. Look at this one.
That's scary.
talking. Keep talking. Oh no, I'll pretend you're cleaning my room and you don't have to clean it today. And I'll give you a tip. I have to tip you anyway. Here, wait. I'm going to show you another one. Okay. Ooh, look at this one. I did this with my daughters.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, right? Mm-hmm. Here, look at this. You like this? I just put the cheek sticking out the window.
Oh, okay.
So if you saw these, would you laugh?
Yes. Very funny.
Thank you. You've just literally defined everything I needed to hear.
Right.
Here, wait. Let me tip you, please, for cleaning the rooms to this week. Thank you very much.
Thank
I appreciate
you so
it.
Much.
Have a great day. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Do you have a website? Do you have anything you want to promote? Hmm? Do you have a website? Anything?
The website?
Do you have a website?
Yeah.
What's your website?
My website is
Four?
Fall Sule.
Fall? How do you spell that?
It's
here, write it down and we'll promote it. Here you go. Here, write it down and I'll promote it. Are you going to pull it off? It's a Sharpie. Pull the top. Just pull the top.
Oh, right here? Right
yeah,
here?
Yeah. Okay.
It's a 4.
Yeah.
You put like an S.
Yeah.
U and a P. Sule.
And then.
And this is an L.
Sule. And then for soul.
Yeah, for soul.
At what? Is that.
My son, no, let me call him. 1 second.
Okay, sure. Call your son.
Yeah, I don't go too much on. I don't use too.
Oh, wait,
much.
Oh, is it? No, is this an email address? Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh no. I meant like no. I don't want. I'm not going to give out your email address.
Okay, okay.
No. Just like a place. Do you have children? Do they do anything like music or comedy?
My son likes to do those kind of stuff, like put his stuff like this.
He does.
Yeah, sometimes he do.
What's his name? Maybe we can find him online.
Little, so I don't
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate you being a part of this.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
I
talked to you all day. Are you sure you have to leave?
Yeah.
You sure?
Thank you. So
I appreciate it. You have a great day. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, leave it open because he's coming back.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you. Oh, that's the beauty of a podcast right there, people. I guess I'll have to leave that in. She was beautiful. She was great. That was so much fun. And that's the fun thing about this, is there's no rules. Maid comes in. I feel weird calling her maid. That sounds awful. But the maid comes in, and we get to show her my What Will the Maid Think? I'll show you the pictures I showed her. I showed her the chest in the refrigerator. I showed her the snake toilet. That was the one she liked the best. The dog. She was like, wait, you make that? And then the man in the couch. The man in the couch. These are all on my website, I think, or they're on my Instagram or something. I also showed her the feet under the bed with the E.T. ghost hanging out in the back. I showed her the Bert the Conqueror Sunday nights at 8, which no longer exists. I showed her the body figure on the ground that's flexing. I showed her the towel, the curtain, the sheet out the window. Oh, shut the fuck up. Oh, look at this. Where was that? I'm looking on the Bert the Conqueror Facebook page, and they have a picture of the time I got What Will the Maid Think pranked in Glenwood Canyon Springs at the – what hotel was this? Let's see if I can pull this up. Glenwood Canyon Springs. It's on the Bert the Conqueror Facebook page. How the fuck does the Bert the Conqueror Facebook page have more fans than I do? Well, this show's not even around. I can't find it. Maybe I'll go to pictures. This is what a podcast would sound like with me alone, guys, is me surfing the internet talking to you. Oh, look, there's me and Adam. Oh, wow. This is a pretty cool fucking page. Okay, if you go to, if you want to see this, this is actually pretty cool. Go to the Birth Conqueror Facebook fan page. It's got 23,000 fucking people. Oh, you guys have a picture of me and Georgia and Island Leanne. Oh, these are really cool pictures. Oh, this worked out fucking great.
Yeah.
Jeff's back. Okay, go to the bathroom. And there's pictures of me and Adam going skydiving, indoor skydiving. There's the picture, if you scroll through, God, I'm fucking tweeting this right now, of when I got What Will the Maid Think pranked. Oh, Twitter, of course, Facebook wouldn't let you send it to Twitter. Why would they? Oh, share. Yeah, it does. Share. Loading. Nope, share. Oh, I'll share on my timeline. Share photo. So yeah, this is what a podcast would sound like with me alone. Maybe I'll do one time and just fucking test the ground so that I can do one. I can release two a week, one with a guest and then one with me. And it's just me. I'll do it late night. I will not do it drinking because, sadly enough, I don't sound bad when I'm drinking, talking to another person. But when I'm drinking by myself, it sounds really fucking weird. Like, really weird. Jenna Knight, Matt Fultron, Patrick Million, Brendan Burns. We were just talking about him. He says, I read a message from Brendan Burns. Let's read from a caller. Terrible time trying to get a hold of you. Provenza and I want to come to the Wednesday house. Is that cool? Let me know. Fuck. Should have read this. This was sent Monday, and I was in Minnesota. Fuck. I am so bad at this shit. Oh, I should read more messages. I'm super bad businessman in the sense that I don't like doing the work. Like, I don't mind doing the creative work, but the fucking legwork that has to happen to be a businessman in this business. Here, let me undo this. I suck at. She loved the pictures.
Yeah?
Yeah. She loved them.
It's such a funny thing. What would the maid think?
I said, do you have an address you want to, website you want to promote? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, shut up. She's got a website? She gave me her email address. And I was like, oh, fuck. I got to take that out. I was like, yeah. We're not going to let everyone email you. She's from the Ivory Coast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Really nice lady. That was fucking great. And I gave her a tip.
Oh, good. Really?
Yeah, I had to. I tip big on maids. I always do.
Yeah?
Yeah, because I feel like I have such a fucking reputation for these fucking places.
Yeah.
That I go, fuck. I stay here.
Oh, I never finished my story. That club that I went to that I don't want to name, and I went out drinking with the staff on Thursday night.
Yeah.
The Red Bull vodka. Red Bull keeps you standing long after you should have passed out.
Yeah, you told me that.
Jägermeister. I don't remember doing this, but I accidentally ripped everything off the wall in the bathroom. The towel bars.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know how. I think I fell.
Oh, shit. Just
at night.
And just fucking.
Yeah. Just took it all to the ground and then woke up the next day and was like, holy shit, something happened.
Oh, that's.
Something happened here.
That's fucking. Those are the nights where you wake up and you like your arms sore and you're like, wonder why. And you're like, yeah. Oh my God, why are my ribs cut?
What did I do? And it's because I should have, like, I blacked out from the alcohol, but I didn't pass out because of the Red Bull.
Yeah.
So my body's still moving around.
Wait, what were we talking about before this, though? Okay,
the sour grapes.
No, yeah. Wait, what were you going to say about sour grapes right before you had to leave?
Oh, it was the. Where you work your ass up to climb the ladder, and then you realize it's not even
a ladder.
But
that's the majority of comics' belief. The majority of comics are going through some sort of sour grapes in one way or another.
And even, I know it's not – I'm just trying to figure out how to do this. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to do it because there's no way to do it.
Yeah.
There's no blueprint. There's nothing you can follow. There's no way you can do – there's no way I could do what Louis did. There's no way anybody could do what I've done. Like, people are like, how did you get on Gotham? I'm like – oh, you need a series of 1 in a million events to happen in a row, and then you get on Gotham.
This fucking guy wants 4 tickets.
For Saturday?
8 tickets for the – I think it's sold out. I'm just going to tell him it's sold out.
It's first show – or no, like I got on Gotham because
– I mean, let me call the fucking club. Jesus Christ. I'm fucking
– are you going to call the club on the air?
Yeah. Do you know the club, the number of the Cincinnati Funny Bone?
I should have it, right? I don't know. I don't even know who the manager is now because the guy who was, they change managers frequently. And I don't know. I haven't been there since the new guy's been there.
I'll text Chris.
Find out if it's, I still know Chris.
Chris, I get a kick out of Chris. He's been here forever.
Yeah. Since it was in that old room.
I remember when it was all in the old room. I think that's why me and him are friends.
I like the old room better because the door's not by the stage.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. Is the show? Are the shows sold out tonight, or is there room?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to get people in.
Yeah, I got some dude wants 8 tickets for the early show.
Let me hit Ryan up. Just send me the name and what you're trying to do, and I'll send it over to him.
It's Chris Owens. 8 tickets for the early show.
You just said his name on the air.
Oh. Okay, and, I'll text him right now.
And then just let me know.
Okay, I'll let you know ASAP.
All right, thanks, buddy.
All right, yep.
It's a little bit different at your level, but at my level, when people are like, hey, give me 4 tickets for the show, it's like, I need people to buy tickets to see me now.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be friends. Like, I thought we were all adults. Like, we have our money. We have our own money. Like, I'll do what I can. But there's also nothing weirder than when somebody from across the country sends me a text and is like, do you know who's opening for Gaffigan?
Oh.
No, what the fuck?
Look, that's one thing that I don't understand. Hang on, let me text this guy. I think the shows have been sold out for a week, but I'm seeing what I can do.
Eight is a lot of tickets to ask for.
He texted me. But, last night he told me the shows were sold out, but they can always fucking try to slide people in.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but eight's a lot.
Well, it's not. I want to be very clear that it's not sour grapes. The clubs don't owe me anything. But
no,
I also
I don't think it's sour grapes. But it's just the way comics feel about this business.
But yeah, I don't think the clubs owe me anything. But I also don't think I owe the clubs anything.
Yeah,
and that's where it is. Because
I feel like I owe the club something.
I don't owe the clubs anything. What I don't like is when I had to cancel a gig because I couldn't find an airplane ticket for less than what I was making. Like, I was going to lose – the best I could do was lose $50 on the ticket, and then I had to live in that town for 5 days.
That was the fucking beginning of my career, is I had to find myself. I had to put myself up.
But I couldn't do that.
Everyone. I never
– No, I know, but I couldn't afford to do that, and then I say that a month out, and I get a bunch of shit for it. Why didn't you start looking earlier? Why didn't you – like, all this stuff, and it's like, well, what happened to the first 3 years when I was emailing you, and you were like, listen, I got a million comics. I don't have room yet. Well, yeah. Why don't you call one of those million? Like, you didn't book me forever because of that. Now you finally got around to it. I'm good enough to work your club. I've been there before, and I just can't lose $50 on the ticket plus $200 to live in your town.
Yeah.
And
I know what you're saying.
But you have a million comics. Like, it's just
David Tell told me when I first started, it only gets worse. Every step where you think you've crossed some fucking barrier, it only gets worse. Like, just when you think, oh, great, now I'm selling out, yeah, it only gets worse because now you're, like, worried about headcounts and you're worried about fucking that Attell's ever worried about a headcount. But, like, you're worried about, am I providing a good show for a sold-out show? Will I sell out next year? Like, all the it all fucking spirals. So now you are back in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You're working here.
I've been here for – I moved back in the end of August of 2010, so it's been – 2.5 years.
But you're doing the road when you choose to do the road.
Yeah.
And you work with Stanhope when he tours.
Yeah, I work with Stanhope whenever he's around, whenever he does a thing. And then I'm just trying to do just what I want, like the clubs I want.
Fucking Facebook. Sorry.
The clubs I want, the clubs I like, the clubs that have always been good to me, the places I like doing stand up, And the things where I can make money. Like, I don't want clubs to hear this and be like, how come does he not like us? Well, it might not be that. It might just be you're 1,200 miles away.
Yeah.
And I can't keep breaking even.
Like, Cincinnati's a good place to be located because there's so many clubs around here.
Yeah. And
there's
I do
so many clubs.
You know, there's clubs I like to work, and I'm not gonna bail out on those clubs. I like working. I like working in Nashville. I like working in Bloomington. And whatnot, but it's like you try so hard, and then they just don't care. But then they get mad at you because you make a move to further yourself. Like so many people at clubs like to be gatekeepers. Where like, no, we tell you when you headline. Like, well, no, I mean, I've been opening for like,
yeah.
This is merit based. This is a merit based industry, not a seniority based industry.
Like, yeah,
just because this guy's been here for 25 years. He's not, you know, he's selling no tickets. He's not selling any more tickets than I could sell. He's got less credits, never been on television. Like, I don't think being on television means anything, but yeah. It does mean something.
It means something because getting on television gets you into radio. Getting on radio gets you out to the people that know that
there's a
show.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's a build-up effect.
And there is, and you're kind of on both sides of the fence a little bit because if the goal is just to put asses in seats, then the guys who do television and decide to do stand up, that's their only fucking purpose into coming into that club.
No, that's fine. Like, again, I just don't. I'm not against the clubs booking them or them working the clubs. I just wish that they treated what I've devoted my life to with a little bit more respect.
No one's gonna ever. I remember, like, that will never happen. Even the clubs that you think there's no club around that actually, like. I mean, think about, I'm trying to think, I don't even know if these guys exist, but like, who are the fucking comics that are just murderers that we love and they're not getting any respect on the road? Like, Andy Kindler.
Yeah.
Andy Kindler is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I'd watch him eat crackers on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't have offers. I mean, maybe he doesn't want to do offers. Maybe he doesn't want to do the road. Maybe it's his choice, but like,
But I've also seen Andy Kindler walk 90 people from a room.
Yeah, but I would love to watch that.
Yeah,
as a personal, like, yeah, yeah, I try to explain to people. I'd buy a ticket to watch him walk.
No, I know, but
people.
You know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
I watched that happen and I loved it. But guess what? I got in free.
Yeah,
I think I was opening for him. I was in the middle.
I think I've got a refined sense of comedy. The same way, like, I never understood how a person could tell the difference between a 100-year-old bottle of wine and a 10-year-old bottle of wine.
Right.
I can with comedy. Right, I can with comedy. I can tell you, fucking, there are comics that I dig that no one would like. But I like them because I know what they're doing.
Right.
I know what they're doing on stage. I don't think my tastes have always been refined. I think it took a while to get there.
Well, the road. But, I mean,
drinking
$10,
$2 chuck where you're like, motherfucker, give me something that's fucking tastes good.
I still don't mind it. I still don't like, but I do the same thing with beer where they're like, my friends are like, we got to go to this place because they got $4 whatever, like some fancy beer or whatever. I'm like, I don't want a I'm not looking for a cheaper, really good beer. That's not the kind of beer I want. But the kind of beer I want is I want 9 beers. So I'm going to go wherever Budweiser's cheapest.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to drink 9 Budweisers. I can't drink 9 IPAs. It'll eat out, my esophagus will fall apart, and I'll have to breathe through a tube.
I think I need to switch my beers.
Why? What do you drink?
Heineken.
Is that too rough?
I don't know. I definitely got heartburn last night.
Yeah.
It's if I don't eat something before I go to bed and I have Heinekens in my system, I'll have heartburn.
Well, any sort of reflux. Well, you always gotta have a little something in your stomach.
No, I'm dieting. I'm fucking
really.
Yeah, I had egg whites yesterday for breakfast. I had Chipotle burrito bowl for lunch, and then I had a chicken breast and some veggies for dinner. And today I had salmon salad, and then I'll eat something at the club, and that's it. I'll eat fucking nothing. I'll be fucking so skinny.
Your hat's not even going to fit.
Oh, it doesn't fit already. I buy a size 8 because they shrink, but this one hasn't shrunk totally. Yeah. So it's a little loose, and all people do when they see a picture of this is like, fold your fucking brim, asshole. I'm like, I'm not a redneck.
I love it. I love it when people are like, when people are dicks on the internet. There's nothing funnier. I just got tweeted that the other day from some guy that was like, eat a bag of dicks big time. Like, what are you doing? Why do you?
First of all, you're stealing Louis C.K.'s joke.
Yeah. Also, why? Like, why take the time?
Because it's, you know, it's like what they're, you know what it is. I think, and I'm speaking in general terms because I don't know why people do that because I have never done it. I take that back. I have done it. I actually stopped myself from sending a dick ass tweet the other day and was like, holy shit, why am I attacking this person? Like, I'm attacking this person so that my fans will laugh.
Yeah.
But then this person has to read it, and then they go, what the fuck did I do to you today? Like, and so I was like, I think that's one, is to get a laugh from your fans, the people reading your site. Like, and then if you get into a back and forth, the people that follow you, or more people will follow you and go like, what the fuck? He came back at him? Like, that's why I don't reply to negative stuff. I'm barely even reading my Twitter these days, to be dead honest with you. Yeah. I peruse it, and anything positive or with a picture, I retweet.
Yeah.
People are like, enough with a lot of comics and my friends go, enough with the positive or retweeting compliments. That's like fucking a humble brag or whatever. No, what it does is it gets more positive fucking comments.
Yeah.
People who retweet negative comments fucking get more negative comments.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just.
That's true. I like, but positive. I mean, I try to be positive. I had bouts with negativity, but it's still. Like, it's still fun. Like, doing stand-up's fun. I guess that's where it comes off like sour grapes. Some people have gone out of their way to make stand-up not as fun. And that's not why I ever did it. I'd rather it be fun. And so, yeah, if it should only be fun.
And you
don't get to treat me like a business acquisition and then get angry at me because I've hurt our personal relationship by going to another room in the same town because they offered me 3 times as much money or decided to be like, you're a headliner.
Oh,
come work for us. And then they're like, but you worked for us. Like, yeah,
I'm well past that. I've started this business with personal relationships with everyone I worked with.
Yeah.
Everyone. I have fired every single person in my life that ever meant anything to me. I have no more love in my heart when it comes to business.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking, I am the machine. I fucking barrel through. And I just, the last one was my fucking my longtime agent, who I absolutely still to this day love with my heart, but I had to do it because it was the right business move. And I was like, there are no fucking rules in this business. It's business. It's like why I'm moving over to the Punchline in Atlanta. And they were like, do you need to call Marshall? I was like, I don't. He knows that he's going to know it. And that's all. I mean, it says, what, am I going to break it easy? Am I going to have a conversation, phone call conversation with him? I can't do the Laughing Skull. I just can't make enough money there to justify a weekend for me.
And you're going to end up calling him is going to end up putting you in a situation where you have to you just have to weather him trying to talk you out of it.
Right. And I'm like, and I don't, that's not going to happen. I love Marshall, and I'd want him to do a guest set at the Punchline, but I know that'll never happen. But like, I don't want to stop being friends with him, but I'm sure he understands it deep down inside. That's the other thing about these business decisions is people understand it deep down inside, but they don't want you to change it. Like, I love the Laughing Skull is a fucking great room. I love that room. It's a fun room because you don't get big gut laughs. You get fucking real laughs. You get like the real laughs that of like an awkward, quiet room. And you write a ton. Not that everyone that does that room, not a lot of people that do that room write a ton. They just do their acts, and you're like, that's not. You're using this room for the wrong fucking reason. But I love that room. I would do that room. I would swing by and do that room on a late night while I'm in Atlanta. I love that room that much. But I need to make money to go on the road. I cannot justify fucking. I can't justify $100 ticket prices so that I can break even for the weekend.
Right, right.
You know, because you're only
get what you need.
Well, there's only 80 seats in the room.
Well, you're also paying out whatever you make. People have to understand you're paying out
half
at least.
More than.
You have a manager, an agent, taxes,
lawyer,
a lawyer, expenses. Like, you're
I have two kids, two cars, a mortgage, a wife. Like,
right,
I just,
right. And
it's
you're
a
paying
business.
Through the kids, the cars, the mortgage, and the wife on 40 cents on the dollar from what you're making on the weekend.
Yeah.
And so when you're making – when you're making 40 cents on the dollar because the room's tiny. Now you're trying to live on 40 cents on that dollar.
Yeah.
And the room can be great and the people can be great and the guy that runs it can be great, but you have
And Marshall can't give you 100% of the door cuz he needs to make money on
right.
that room.
You're running a business. The business is you,
yeah.
but it's a business. And you know,
and I'm telling you right now, there are a lot of guys that make more money than me on the road that do that room, but that's because they can. I just can't right now. I'm not in that place in my career where I can.
You also don't get to – you're so busy with the other stuff that you have to pick your road stuff too a little
yeah.
bit.
I mean, Greg Proops probably goes into that room and does a weekend there and fucking creates. And but he's got millions of dollars, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure he's got a million dollars, I'm sure. He's been in this business.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He was on
SpongeBob.
He goes over to fucking Europe and makes like $1 million for like the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
And he's a fucking genius comic. He's got a great podcast. Like, fucking, that's his career. That's just not mine.
Right. You're allowed to take some vanity weeks.
Yeah.
You're not.
It's like Stanhope can do what he wants to do on the road because he's Doug Stanhope and he has Bingo to take care of and maybe probably a couple people that live on his property.
Well, he's also worked his nut down to nothing.
Yeah.
Like, he owns that place in Arizona.
Yeah.
He lives an hour and a half or 2 hours from the airport.
He's so locked down in what he wants. He got a fucking circumcision of an episiotomy. What the fuck did he get? A vasectomy.
Yeah.
So he doesn't ever have to worry about just a surprise popping up.
Right.
Like, I have fucking I just don't have that life, and I'm jealous at times where I go, God damn it, I'd love to fucking hit Scandinavia. I'd love to fucking do Oslo and then stop by London and do a couple shows and then have fun and see the city and fucking.
Yeah, but it's risky. It's really risky now. That's why I went and got a job so that when I do stand up, I can try to do stand up more on like the way I want to do it, like to make it fun again.
Yeah.
Whereas like that's why I'm doing those, like I'm trying to do these bars or whatever, like.
I just want to do a tour with dudes I like. Like, I want to just do a big tour, like at theaters with like four or five comics that I fucking get along with and be on a tour bus and
like
not
what
fly.
Rogan does.
No, Rogan.
Bit?
Rogan does.
There's
it.
There's no real bus.
No, Rogan.
Involved, right?
Rogan does it, but it's like it's.
But he's like when he showed up in Cincinnati, it was Red Band and Tripoli were with him.
Yeah, but it's just one show.
Yeah,
like I want to do the fucking road. I want to do show after show after show. Like, and I can't just I'm fucking so badly want to just give up one weekend and do one fucking UFC weekend with Joe and just fucking go to the fight and party at night. And
well, Segura's doing that this fall. Like, I know I'm doing a few shows with him and Christina.
Yeah.
Like Death Squad stuff or whatever. And Dayton and
Oh yeah, with
Columbus
with
and
Red Band
else.
And
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm going to do some of those. I think Pittsburgh.
Those are fun shows.
There's a handful of those, and it's just, like, I'm looking forward to it because I fucking love Tom and Christina.
Yeah, you'll have a good time.
And I get to spend 3 or 4 days with them.
And getting involved with anything Death Squad's always a good idea. It's a good fucking group. It's a fucking solid, like hashtag of people.
Yeah. It took me a long time to figure out what it was. I had no idea.
Oh, they're fucking awesome. It's the greatest affiliation I've ever had. They come out in droves. They come out to, like, they come out and they're like, yeah, man, we're here for both shows. We're going to go to early show and late show. And, like, you're like, really? Or they'll come out Thursday and then we're like, we'll see you Sunday. We got a bigger party coming out Sunday. They bring 8 people with them. That's the great thing about, like, Death Squad's. They'll be like one dude and he'll be in his Death Squad shirt and his wife will be like, I got him tickets. He's a big fan of the podcast. He loves Joe. He loves Matt, Joey Diaz. He loves Ari. And he brought 19 people he works with. And, like, it's the fucking greatest. I fucking love it. So, yeah, they'll be there. They'll be in full force tonight.
Are you, is this a Death Squad podcast?
Yeah, but not, like, it's not on the network. It's not on Death Squad Network, but the Death Squad Network Death Squad. I'm hesitant to ever say anything like that, only because it sounds weird to be 40 years old and be like, yeah, I'm Death Squad.
I'm in a club.
But no, I am Death Squad. I am a part of the Death Squad family, Death Squad for life.
I know that I feel like I might be, let's say, Death Squad adjacent.
You're definitely Death Squad adjacent. Death Squad adjacent.
I live in Beverly Hills, but I don't have the 90210 area code.
Hey, what's up, babe?
Are you sleeping?
No, I'm doing a podcast.
Oh, okay. What,
what's up?
I wanted to talk to you about our family's flights to Georgia, but that's probably not a good time.
Yeah, let me call you back.
All right, babe.
All right, love you. So,
was that your agent?
Yeah, that was my agent. but yeah, touring with Stanhope is Doug Stanhope is. Although I don't think Doug is like is. I don't know. The Death Squad moniker is an interesting brand. I'd like to get a fucking list of who is Death Squad. It's Tripoli, Rogan, Red Band, Ari, Joey.
Like some people have co-opted it. Like, are there like 80 Death Squad podcasts?
No.
Because people that like listen to my thing and it's a Death Squad for life. And like, are they just like fans that have their own podcast?
Yes, they are. They are part of the Death Squad family, I guess. But they're fans. And
Death Squad sounds so mean.
I think it was meant as a joke. It was meant as a joke because Joe came into some radio station. It was Opie and Anthony. Joe walked into Opie and Anthony and Opie saw Joe with all his friends and they're all wearing like hoodies and they're all fucking in shape, and he's like, look at Joe roll in with the Death Squad. And so then they started using it as a joke, and then when Joe started doing his podcast, it came up, and then Red Band kind of took the ball and ran with it to make sure that, you know, like to kind of move it forward, and then I think that kind of blew it up. And now Red Band has his Death Squad network, which is like, I want to say it's probably Tripoli's show, it's Kevin Pereira, it's probably
Ari?
Little Lester, not Ari.
Not
Ari. Myself, and Joey Diaz are kind of just independent. I think, yeah, we're just independent. Tom's
Segura
independent.
Too, right?
Segura's independent too, and Joe's independent. Joe's not even on. The only reason I say that is because Brian does so many podcasts that he has to release them when he has space available.
Yeah.
So he can't just release them right when you tape them.
Yeah.
So that's why I think everyone went to their own one so they could release it when they wanted to release it.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like, you know. So, yeah, and then I guess I don't know.
It's weird that it's like in every town the comedy scene's a little clicky.
Yeah.
But now it's like it's breaking off into this other thing where it's like, you're Death Squad, you're Nerdist, you're like.
Well, podcasting has definitely done that. You're Earwolf. Yeah. Earwolf and Nerdist don't clash. I'm like, what the fuck?
I thought they were the same thing.
I thought they were the same thing, too. I was like, aren't you guys all the same people?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, that's Earwolf. We're Nerdist. Nerdist hangs out at the comic book stores. Earwolf hangs out at UCB. And so, like, I think it's fucking fascinating.
Yeah. But that's where they're Nerdist. But then they also go to the UCB. And the Earwolf still goes to comic book stores. But
well, like,
not.
A lot of the people that are on, like, different, like, All Things Comedy is Bill Burr, Al Madrigal, Ari's on All Things Comedy, but they all cross over to Death Squad. I mean, I think, you know, the thing is, there is no real fucking ding death squad in that win our friendship.
I know they were nice to me when I got in that fight on that Steinhope tour and some fuckface stole my hat.
Yeah.
Segura tweeted about it, and then death squad people were, for like the next 2 weeks, were like, I'm going to South Bend. I'm fucking going to get your hat back. What bar were you in? And like the death squad people really picked up the mantle. And were,
oh, they're
we'll
fucking amazing like
thing.
That. They are fucking an army.
I really thought they would find my hat. They didn't. Get after it, death squad. Go get my hat. It's in South Bend.
This is Bert Squad.
Bert Squad.
Bert Squad. Bert I should have called it the Bert Squad podcast.
Bert Squad.
Oh, shit. Almost just fucking unplugged our thing.
There was a brief contest between whether or not Death Squad or Stanhope's Sausage Army could find the hat first.
That's right. I heard him say he wanted to have a group called the Sausage Army.
Yeah, yeah.
Stanhope's an interesting guy. I texted him when he was in LA to see if he could do my podcast. He's like, oh, I'm in and out next time.
He does. He goes to LA as little as possible for the least amount of time possible.
That makes sense.
I was eating breakfast today, and there was a guy in the restaurant wearing your shirt.
Are you shitting me?
No, not at all.
That's fucking awesome.
I said, we see that machine shirt fucking.
Oh,
that's
do you
the
see-
only shirt that a comedian sells that I've ever seen just out in public.
I really lucked into a good shirt. That's a good shirt. Yeah. It's fucking, and it's so propaganda-y, like it's to my face. But it's
so great because it just – that's such a great story. It's long. It's
– fucking 12 minutes long.
It's perfect. And it's just – it's so much drinking. I got so many of those drinking stories, but not like that. Like nothing great. That I can do. I don't do any – I don't think I do one drinking story on stage.
Really?
I just don't think I have any – like my drinking stories are generally like – and then I just barfed by the house. Or whatever. It's like not really. Just
you should
standard
do nine, you should do like 10 drinking stories all together that have great beginnings, and then you're like, and then I barfed.
And then I barfed.
And they go, yeah, yeah. And then this one time, me and this half Native American guy who
that
knew,
is
knew
how they all start. They all start great, like with a lot of enthusiasm, and then but drinking tends to lend itself to like it's got that hard out where you're just done, like and then I don't know. And then it was tomorrow, and like every story could end with and then it was tomorrow.
Yeah,
I have. I've done a lot of drugs. I have stories like that, but not.
You should do drug. I used to do drug stories, like taking acid and going to Disneyland and shit like that.
Yeah,
that was a good story.
I got a good acid story. I took acid and went to a. I used to eat acid and not tell my friends.
I did not understand that.
Well, it's like I ate acid so much that just eating acid became boring. So to spice it up or to make it fun, I would then do it in secret sometimes.
Do you like Jim Morrison?
Yeah.
Like Jim Morrison would eat acid and not tell Pam.
Yeah. Wow. Jim Morrison had a Pam in his life?
Yeah. Wasn't that Pamela?
I don't have any idea.
Pamela Morrison.
I don't know much about. I don't care for the Doors.
Really? Fucking loved the Doors. I loved the Doors. I just wrote a story in my book about when I was in the band Creed. I wasn't in the band Creed. Let me rephrase that. When I was in that sounds like a lie. That is a lie right there. When I was in a band with the guitarist from Creed. And which is not a lie, and everyone can go fuck themselves because that guy denies that ever happened. I go bullshit. I have three dudes who remember it the same way I do. You're the only one who doesn't remember it. And but I was studying to be the lead singer, the front man. I wouldn't call myself the lead singer. I was front man.
Yeah,
because I was like, there's more to it. Not singing's like the littlest part. I need to be hanging out at windows and climbing on rooftops and
so
dancing with a
scarves.
Bottle. Yeah, I need some scarves. That's what I need. Scarves. Oh, fuck. All right, I got to go work out.
Yeah?
Yeah, what do you got to do tonight?
I got to work.
Are you working tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm working at Government Mule.
What?
I thought you were going to go see Government Mule for some reason.
Are they in town tonight?
Yeah, they're in town.
Oh, no.
My waiter over at, but... at the...
I'm going to see Government Mule at Bonnaroo.
My waiter at the Rock Bottom in
Cincinnati.
I used to work
there 7 years ago.
That's why he comped my lunch today.
Yeah.
Dude, I had the fucking compiest day today.
Yeah.
Went to Rock Bottom to go eat lunch, order lunch, order double helping of salmon on my salad.
Yeah.
And he sits down with me, and he's, I think he maybe might have recognized me, or he just liked my hat. Yeah. Like, but we ended up talking about comedy. He asked me what I did. I told him I was a comedian and talked about comedy. And then he came by and gave me a cup, like a glass. And he was like, you know, take this, you know, just like as a, you know, memento. If there's a different one you want, go get it. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then he was like, oh, the manager wants to comp your meal. And I was like, oh, thanks. So I tipped him like $20. I think that's fair, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I tipped him $20. And then I left. I went to Tiffany's because I wanted to get jewelry cleaner. And I walked in and the guy comes up to me and he's like, hey, how you doing? Like, real friendly. I go, good. And he goes, can I help you something? Something for the wife? I went, no, I really just need jewelry cleaner. And he was like, okay, all right, let me see what I can do. And he goes in the back and then gives me this, takes it out front and hands it to me. He goes, just take it. I was like, thanks.
What?
I know. I was like, fucking awesome.
I had the exact opposite experience.
And so I was like, this is fucking great. And then I went to a mall to see if it would happen again, and it didn't.
Then I just stole these things. Everything's free today.
Yeah, so I'm going
to
clean.
I went to I ate breakfast today, and it was like, it was a terrible experience.
Why?
My friends were already there, and me and another friend showed up late, which, whatever. But we order our food. It's very simple. It's brunch. We get two omelets. Our friends do this thing like where like this girl fucked up our order both ways, like her order and my order, just fucked them up, didn't get them right at all. And then we tell her and we fix it, and the like our friends are like, oh man, you know, maybe she's whatever, like trying to like it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Which it isn't. But then after they do that, after they try to placate us for being like, oh, maybe she just got confused or whatever, like, oh, yeah, that's fine, people do that, then they start telling stories about how when they ordered 30 minutes ago, all their food came out fucked up. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Like, you already know there's a pattern here.
Yeah.
Where this girl doesn't get anything right, and now and you're trying to tell us, oh, settle down. It's the most intense confusion that's ever laid upon someone's brain.
Yeah.
And they were like, one of the stories was like, one of the girls ordered eggs Benedict and was like, can I get a tomato on it? And the girl's like, what do you mean, like a slice of tomato? Like, what the fuck? Just write it down. The kitchen will do it. First of all, it's on the menu.
Yeah.
Secondly, I get maybe she wasn't properly trained in this place, but have you honestly never seen Eggs Benedict before? Like,
yeah.
You don't understand how food, like, you just, like, you broke free of a cult.
Some people don't. Like, I remember when I worked at, if they're not, like, we went to a restaurant one time, me and Segura, in Hawaii, and we were like, what's good on the menu? And the girl's like, I don't know. And we're like, what do you mean, how can you not know? She goes, I don't know. I said, well, what have you delivered that is really good? And she goes, like, I don't, you know, it all looks good, but. I go, have you not tasted? And she goes, to be dead honest with you, the manager won't let us taste the food. And I went, can I talk to your manager? And she was like, am I in trouble? I go, no, you're not. But he's an idiot.
That's insane. That must mean the food's not good.
I walk the manager over. I go, we don't want to eat here anymore because she has never tasted any of the food. So what does that mean to you? And he's like, I don't know why she hasn't tasted the food. And she's like, you won't let us eat it, Jerry. And I was like, you need to let them taste the food so they can recommend things.
That's classic Jerry.
Like, yeah. I was like, we don't know what to get. We don't know what anything looks like. We don't know what the plates are. She doesn't know either. No one knows. So how the fuck, like, when you come here to a restaurant, you're like, what do you recommend? They should have a recommendation.
But that's poor management and poor training. What I'm talking about is this girl's never seen food before.
She's like, eggs. But maybe she was homeschooled.
Right. They're like, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, she acted like she just broke free of a cult and got this job yesterday and was like, finally, I can live on my own.
Oh.
But it didn't. And then, like, I'm eating. Like, I still have half an omelet on my plate.
Oh, and dude, they do that all
by,
the yep,
this guy
yep.
walks by and goes, can I take anything out of your way? And I go, oh, no. Like, there was an empty plate somewhere, and he grabbed that. And then he grabs a hold of my plate like he's going to take that. I am in the middle of cutting a bite off my omelet with my fork. Like, my fork is on the plate, and he tries to – I go, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done. What the fuck about looks like I'm done?
Yeah.
What the fuck about me taking a bite? I'm currently taking a bite.
Yeah.
And you try to pull it away from me? Have we been here too long? Like, if we've been here too long, if there's...
Sometimes they try to turn those tables. I've had them do that to me.
Half the tables were empty.
They pulled a plate from me, when I went to the bathroom. I came back, and I go, where did my food go? And they're like, I thought you were done. I go, it was half a fucking cheeseburger there. Like, it was cut in half.
You don't get to decide when I'm done.
Yeah.
You don't get to.
Yeah.
You fucking work there. Like, God damn it. Like, that makes me... Like, it's not... I understand you write it down wrong, or you whatever. You don't know how to work the computers. Yeah. That's fine. That takes care of
50%.
Right now, there's a parallel podcast going on. That's it's called Waitresses, 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 and they're talking about comics.
That's fine. Good. Can you believe that they ordered these things from the menu, just straight from the menu, and then they were dicks about it when it didn't go out right?
I went to a comedy club one time. This guy like talked to me in the crowd. I don't want to talk to you. You do your shit.
Yeah. It said clearly that we would not be talked to. If that's the case, then yes, I agree. If I made a promise that I was going to do magic and that I didn't do magic, you can complain about it.
Yes.
But when I say I would like bacon and cheese and an omelet, and then that's not what I get, and there's and then you try to take half of it away from me before I'm done, what the fuck? Also, when I went out to put money in the meter, this is just funny. This isn't one of those. Like, I'm not going in a fucking Dennis Miller rant.
Yeah.
Which, oh, by the way, that's why I drink a 44-ounce soda. Everywhere I go that offers a 44-ounce soda, I get it. I don't even want this much soda. I just always get the 44-ounce soda because I remember from that 1987 special when Dennis Miller was like, have you seen this new thing at the 7-Eleven, the big gulp 32 ounces of soda? What human being needs 32 ounces of soda? What's the next step? Are they just going to back the truck up to your car and fill it with orange soda?
Yeah.
And I always get the 44-ounce just so I could be like, this is what's next, Dennis, the 44-ounce. It turns out I was able to get one bigger than 32 without backing a truck up to my car. Like, it's this thing in my head from 26 years ago where I'm like, ha-ha, got him. I was riding the elevator up to your room. A guy got on, like, I'm coming up. A guy gets on at 6. He goes, this whole thing baffled me. At 6, the floor stops at 6, and I go, oh, I'm going up. And he goes, yeah, me too. Do you know where the fitness center is? And I go, no, I don't. And he goes, it's on 7. And then he hits 7?
It's on 7.
I don't care where it is.
Yeah.
The fact is, he's looking for the fitness center, and he's unwilling to walk up one flight of stairs to where he thinks the fitness center is.
Yeah.
And why ask me and then give me the answer? Do you know where the fitness center is? I don't. It's on 7. Did I just get tricked?
Yeah.
Like, were you just having a bet in your head where you're like, I bet this guy's stupid?
Yeah, it's on 4.
Yeah, good.
And it's in the South Tower.
Hopefully he took the elevator to 7, walked down to 4, realized that wasn't where it is, and then walked all the way down. And then by the time he gets there, he's already had his workout.
I'm doing a new type of Vine. Are you on Vine?
I am no.
I'm doing a new type of Vine. And my new Vine is to hold the phone to my ear as if I'm talking on the phone,
then hit
record and say outlandish shit like, nah, she's not pregnant, thank God. and then record their reaction to me having a conversation when they think I'm not looking.
Yeah.
But I'm having a hard time aiming.
You'll
like,
get better.
I did a good one. Was like, I go, hey, what's up? I go, nope. My test came back negative. And then I was like, wait, yours is positive? And then that's it. But the woman was like that. But all you can see is the top of her head turning. I missed her face.
Is there any way that you can flip it so it records out
no,
the back?
No.
So it only records like facing you?
No. It records this way.
Okay. So you can hold it up and then you just say, okay, so you'll figure it out.
Watch here. I'll do one to you right now. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you do a really good Vine reaction. So I'll go, there's Diplo. Okay. So I'll go like this. Ready? No, I said no, I'm gay.
Was that good?
Yeah, let's see.
I just spit took onto your floor, I'm sorry. I'm gay.
No, I missed it. See, I missed it.
No, I said no, I'm gay.
I see.
That's so ridiculous.
But I miss it. I always miss it. Oh, I don't care.
It's just a little bit.
It's fine. I had a towel there anyway. So wait, tell us what date you have to promote. So I got to go work out.
I'm in Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase May 24th and 5th.
Okay.
The Limestone Comedy Festival June 6th, 7th, and 8th in Bloomington, Indiana. And June 2nd, Sinking Ship in Indianapolis. And June 3rd. Woodlands Tavern in Columbus, Ohio.
Nice. Should have done
this. And I'm on Twitter, Jeff Tate 96, GEOFFTATE 96. And buy my album, I Got Potential. It's pretty rad.
On iTunes?
Yeah, on iTunes, Amazon, from standuprecords.com.
Nice.
Hit me up, see me at a show.
All right. And these are my dates. I'm in Portland Friday and Saturday, May 4th and 5th. Or no, 3rd and 4th. The next week, Baltimore. The week after that, I'm in Austin. Then I'm in. Do you like how I just Slow roll these. Des Moines. Then I'm in Philadelphia. Then I'm in Buffalo. All right. Those are all my dates. Go to BurtBurtBurt.com. What's your website?
JeffTate.biz.
Did JeffTate.com go to the fucking lead singer?
Yeah. All the other Jeff Tates are for him. JeffTate.net is his, too.
You should get not Jeff Tate.
I think I'm going to get Jeff Tate's Trainwreck. That's the name of my show. Oh, by the way, I don't know why. I always forget to promote this. I have a show the last Tuesday of every month in Cincinnati at Motor Pub in the basement at 8 p.m. called Jeff Tate's Trainwreck.
Oh, nice. All right. If you're
it's a talk show. It's like a podcast, but it's not recorded.
You're a fucking idiot.
No, I know.
Why don't you just record it?
I don't know how.
It's super easy. Buy this. Plug this into the board or just plug this into the...
I'm going to need you to go back further and tell me how to make enough money to buy one of those things. Like, you have to start at the beginning, like all the way.
Those things are cheap.
This is like a team building exercise where you're like, I just do what you say.
Okay. Get a CD and have them record it for you.
All right.
Just have them record it for you, but you need to record the audience too because it's going to sound like a play.
But yeah, it's a live talk show. It's like if Charlie Rose was drunk. That's how I describe it. My dad's usually a guest. I get him to talk about the 60s. My dad said the funniest thing the other day at the show. He goes, he was in 1961 or 1960. He had a job as a credit manager for a furniture store.
Yeah.
And I was like, how did you figure out who got credit in 1960 before computers? Like, was it just based on handshake?
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, what kind of bourbon do you drink? And they're like, I don't drink bourbon. And you're like, I'm sorry, your credit has been rejected.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, we had questions to ask. Like, the second question that he would ask the interview was, and he said this without realizing, with no self-awareness at all. He just goes, yeah, we would ask questions like, what are you looking for and what does your husband do for a living? Like, that was just on the form that he learned in 1960 was just
because it was always like
when he's being trained, the women would buy the furniture and the guy would go to work and he didn't even think about it. Like, it's 50 years later and it didn't occur. I started laughing like crazy and he didn't really even get it at first. And then he realized, oh yeah, that is insane. But it was 50 years ago when you're being trained, like, here's how you figure out how to give him credit. You ask him questions like, what does your husband do for a living?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of cigarettes does he smoke? Oh, he doesn't smoke cigarettes. Ooh, sounds like
it. And we had phone interview questions, too. Like, are you good at running?
Yeah, which one are you? There's five of us on the phone. Let's make sure we don't overlap.
Awesome, man. All right, I'm going to go work out.
Oh, this is great. Thanks for having me.
No, don't mention it, Jeff. Thank you. This episode was brought to you by The Machine.